Good morning, everybody, and we call our meeting to order. It's a pleasure to welcome you to today's Dallas City Council briefing meeting. This morning, we are honored to have a very special guest joining us. Please join me in welcoming Father Matthew Oliver with the Church of the Incarnation. We appreciate being held due to the Incarnation. I can tell you, we were just visiting. I had a chance to be with them during the Christmas service of last year. That's again being planned. And if anybody in this community wants to go to a terrific Christmas service, it is there. So thank you for being with us. Please rise to the invocation.
Let us pray. Lord God Almighty, who has made all the peoples of the earth for your glory to serve you in freedom and peace, grant to the people of our country a zeal for justice and the strength of forbearance, that we may use our liberty in accordance with your gracious will. And now send down upon the city council the spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice, that with steadfast purpose they may faithfully serve in their offices to promote the well-being of all who live in this city. All this we ask through Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Ms. Hossel, could you do the pledge for us, lead us? We have a number of special presentations this morning. First of all, I'd like to begin with a special one for the Circle 10 Boy Scouts of America. Jan, if you could bring you and your group up here. The Boy Scouts? Okay. I'll tell you what. Oh, there we go. Please help me in welcoming to the podium members of the Circle 10 Council of the Boy Scouts of America. Come on up here. Russell Etzhauser, the Director of Field Services, Wendy Curtin, the Marketing Director, Jan Comer, who's the pilot for the Saturday air show and pilot for, I think, about every other air show, too, and Charlie Moore, the Centennial Jamboree Event Chair. In October, the Boy Scouts of America will be celebrating their 100th anniversary. Boy Scouts have made it their mission to prepare young people to make ethical choices over their lifetimes by instilling in them the values of the Scout Oath and the Scout Law. The success of their scouting has culminated in thousands of hours of selfless volunteerism thanks to the generosity of many, many community leaders and organizations who help shape the lives of these young men and women. Last year alone, the 810 Eagle Scout projects resulted in 106,000 hours of community service, and 50,000 hours were completed by the Circle 10's Order of the Arrow. It's a pleasure to be able to present this proclamation in honor of Scouting Week. This is a special one for me, too, because I've been involved with Circle 10 now for probably more years than I would like to admit. Terrific organization that not only views service, but views character and integrity as being core to what they're doing. As was mentioned, they've been around an awful long time. They've had an enormous impact. I can tell you today, people who say they're an Eagle Scout say it with pride and with a distinction. And we're just appreciative that there'd be so many people in our community, adults who would understand how important it is to work with, serve, mold our young people. And I can't think of a better organization than that, the Boy Scouts, and especially Circle 10, which is clearly recognized as one of the best councils anywhere in America. So if I could, I'll read this proclamation. And I won't read all of it, but it says, whereas on October 29, 2010, the Circle 10 Boy Scouts of America is celebrating Scouting's 100th anniversary. And it also talks about the incorporation back in February of 1910. It talks about the mission of the Boy Scouts of America to prepare young people to make the ethical choices over their lifetimes by instilling character, integrity, and values to them. It talks about duty to God and to country and to help other people at all times, the real cornerstones of scouting. It also talks about scouting for Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, varsity teams, venture crews, explorers, culmination of so many hours of volunteerism and the impact that that's had on our community. It also talks about all of the hours that I identified before that go into service to the community. And then it says, whereas there are 933 churches and synagogues, schools, and parent-teacher associations, service and fraternal clubs, and other community organizations have been chartered in our area by the Boy Scouts of America Service Scouting Program. And whereas the volunteer leaders selecting these chartered organizations are performing an outstanding service to our community. And whereas the Circleton Council of Boy Scouts of America, its core dedicated volunteer leaders, are providing necessary support to the leaders in the 1,382 Cub Scout packs, Boy Scout troops, Venture Crews, and Explorer posts, it is now therefore my honor as Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, to proclaim October 29, 2010 through October 31, 2010 as Scouting Weekend in Dallas. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On behalf of the Executive Board and the over 17,000 adults who volunteer their time to bring scouting to the roughly 60,000 young people we serve each year, I want to thank the City of Dallas and all of the help and cooperation that you have provided to us to help make possible this great celebration that we will have. And we've always counted on and have been very grateful as we've received the support of this community, and particularly the support of the City of Dallas. Thank you, sir. Especially thank Mayor Assume for her, Mary Assume for her great work and her guidance and support in this, and Lana Furr out at Redbird Airport, and of course all the City Aviation Department at Love Field and elsewhere. Thank you very much.
Now I will tell you, 100 years is impressive. 125 years is even more impressive. I'd like to introduce two special people and ask them to come up. First is Robert Deckard, who's the CEO of Belo Corporation. Second is Jim Maroney, who's the Executive Vice President. If they would join me at the podium. It was back on October 1st of 1885. AH Belo Corporation published the first edition of the Dallas Morning News and since has maintained their commitment to publishing quality journalism and has become one of the largest and premier newspapers in all of the United States. The Dallas Morning News has committed itself to the Dallas community, and we've seen that in so many different efforts over the course of the years, distributing more than 1 million annually to various nonprofit organizations throughout the Dallas Morning News Charities Program. It is my pleasure, and again on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, Robert and Jim, to present to you this proclamation. It is a small token of thanks, again, not only for what people see publicly each morning when they open the newspaper, but more than that, all of the people, all of the efforts that you put in to building our community and making it strong. Now, I was kidding both of these gentlemen a little bit earlier by telling them that they didn't look nearly 125. Robert pointed out that it depends the day that you catch him on, but we are just so appreciative of what the Dallas Morning News does, what Belo Corporation does, and especially the both of you. Both of you are leaders in our community. We appreciate what you do from a professional standpoint, but also from the community standpoint. So it's a pleasure to give this special recognition, and let me read it to you. Whereas AH Belo Corporation published the first edition of the Dallas Morning News, a daily newspaper in Dallas, Texas, on October 1 of 1885, and it is committed to publish the newspaper every day since, without missing a single day of publication in those 125 years. And whereas on October 1st, 1906, George Dealey, publisher of the Dallas Morning News, declared to employees on the newspaper's 21st anniversary that his predecessor and mentor, H.B. Lowe, had built the news upon the rock of truth and righteousness, conducting it always upon the lines of fairness and integrity, acknowledging the right of the people to get from the newspaper both sides of every important question. And whereas the Dallas Morning News moved to its flagship Dallas location on Young Street in 1949 and 1984 established one of the largest newspaper printing facilities in the United States, known as the North Plant. And whereas the Dallas Morning News has maintained its commitment to creating quality journalism and has received nine Pulitzer Prizes from 1986 through 2010. And whereas today the Dallas Morning News reports local news and information to more than 1 million daily readers. And whereas the Dallas Morning News established the Dallas Morning News Charities in 1986 to serve the needs of the community by raising and distributing more than $1 million annually to area nonprofits. Now, therefore, it's my pleasure as Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, to present to you this special recognition, the Dallas Morning News, upon the occasion of their 125th anniversary. Congratulations.
Mayor, thank you, and for the benefit of the council members, I actually said if you added Jim's and my ages together, we're almost 225, and we're closing fast. Very seriously, and on Jim's behalf as well, it is a privilege for any newspaper or any media company to operate in a city where the city's leadership is as ambitious for its citizens as ours has always been, and is optimistic. I assure you that is not an opportunity present for many newspapers and local news organizations in the United States. We feel very lucky to be here. As the mayor said, we feel very much that we have worked together towards these ends, and we're committed to continuing to do so as long as we can hold it together, which will be, I hope, well past the 150th. So thank you very much for this recognition, Mayor.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. Ms. Hostel, could you come up here and stand beside me, because I know of your passion for this. And the mayor, you stay close too, because the mayor's got a committee that he's put together for the employment of people with disabilities. And if I could have Beth, Ray, Linda, Barbara, Catherine, Robert, Melissa, if y'all come on up here, if all y'all come up here. This is part of the Dallas Mayor's Committee for the Employment of People with Disabilities. These folks getting ready to walk up here, they represent a lot of great companies that are out there that are doing good things for people with disabilities out there. While they're coming up here, I'm just going to just kind of start to set the stage just a little bit. Disabilities. Y'all know 1 out of 10 folks in America today has a disability? 1 out of 10 folks. It's estimated that here in Dallas we probably have around 130,000 folks just in Dallas that have disabilities. And all they're asking for, the majority of them, is just simple, the best quality of life they can have at the end of the day. They want to be part of society. They want to be able to go to and have a job and be productive. What I've seen with me when I first started down this road, and these fine folks right here taught me so much. But when I first became aware of folks with disabilities, I'm a banker by trade. I got introduced, some folks asked me, well, could you hire somebody with a disability? And my first thought was, well, man, after they've licked a couple of stamps, I don't know what they can do. I didn't have any imagination. I had no imagination whatsoever. But I had the good people standing here to my left. They had imagination because they'd already been down the road in front of me. They'd already seen what these folks can do. And lo and behold, I ended up hiring a young man with autism. That young man, he's taught me more than I've ever learned from folks that have normal abilities. That young man with autism. Give you an example. Mayor, a year or so ago, we were in the heat of an election, and I was being portrayed on TV, and it wasn't very pretty. And this young man came in, and he's my buddy. He came in, and he said, Mr. Allen, I saw you on TV last night. And boy, my old heart sank, because it wasn't real pretty what was on TV. And I said, well, Josh, how'd I look? He looked right at me, and he said, you looked awesome. You looked awesome. That man doesn't have a mean bone in his body. That man doesn't have a mean bone. Couldn't even think a negative thought if he had to think a negative thought. And what that young man does for our organization, has done for that organization, is he brings people together. He brings them together. Not only does he bring them together, he does one heck of a good job day in, day out, day in and day out, day in and day out. So, folks, what y'all do, you know, we couldn't recognize you enough, say enough good things about you. I could give you proclamations every day. Still not enough for what y'all do and the way you reach out. Because all we're looking at is inclusion, is inclusion. With that, we have a special proclamation here. And I want you, if you start it off,
oh, great.
And you go ahead. And you read so much better than
you do. Thanks, Jerry, for giving me that task. No, I do want to say that the reason I'm up here with Jerry is because last year when he had his press conference for Disability Month, I wanted to be there because my sister-in-law had acquired glaucoma and thought she couldn't work anymore. But the insurance company that she worked for, and this was in South Texas, gave her a computer with very large monitor and lettering and the additional apparatus that she needed to be able to see big letters in order to do her job. So I'm very much thankful for all of your the folks that are here today that hire the people that are disabled, because they are definitely people who contribute to our society. So thank you. So here's my task. The Dallas Mayor's Committee for the Employment of People with Disabilities was established to engage the business community to build a diverse workforce by valuing people with different abilities. And they really aren't disabilities, right? They're just different abilities. Special abilities. The unemployment rate for individuals with disabilities ranges from 65 to 79% depending on the type and severity of the disability, and that 87% of American consumers would prefer to give their business to companies that hire people with disabilities. The DMC believes that competitive employment is the key to implement empowerment and improve quality of life for adults with cognitive disabilities. DMC is comprised of over 20 members from a cross-section of 18 businesses, nonprofit, and governmental organizations. The members of DMC have worked tirelessly over the past 6 months to put together a job fair scheduled for October 6, 2010, at El Centro Community College, where employers can tap into a talented and diverse workforce. The month of October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, so Tom Leppard and the entire City Council, on behalf of us, we hereby extend special recognition to the Dallas Mayor's Committee for the Employment of People with Disabilities. Thank you.
Between the two of you, I think you've covered it. We appreciate it. I think too often, as Jerry and Delia said, sometimes we don't give credit where we should give credit. We do that in a lot of different cases. This is one where your organization, the work that what you're doing, really elevates individuals. It makes them feel part of the community because they are part of the community. It gives them that chance that they need. And so we just appreciate everything that you're doing. We hope that in some little way this will build awareness for those individuals with disabilities, and I think better said, have some special opportunities to work with them, find them ways that they can contribute, and when they do that, then they feel so much better. And we as a community benefit from it too. So thank you for what you do. Continue to build the awareness, because if we can build the awareness, and as both Delia and Jerry said, people can see the impact people with disabilities can have, and it's the same impact you and I, then it makes a difference. We appreciate what you're doing.
Robert, real quick, any of y'all want to say something? Tell us about this event coming up, because I want y'all to hear it real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Really appreciate those words. On behalf of the Dallas Mayor's Committee for the Employment of Persons with Disabilities, we'd like to thank the mayor, thank the Dallas City Council, and especially Jerry Allen. Councilman Allen has been a great advocate to not only folks with disabilities, but the employment of people with disabilities. And so, Mr. Allen, we really appreciate your support. And I invite you all to come down to El Centro Community College on October 6th and come see our job fair. There'll be a bunch of employers out there, a bunch of job seekers, and really see the great work that the Dallas Mayor's Committee for the Employment of People with Disabilities is doing here in Dallas. So thank you very much. We are honored to have you.
Real quick, can y'all just say real quick which company y'all from so we can hear y'all?
I am working with you.
Ms. Margolin, can I call on you for the next recognition?
Good morning. I'd like for T.J. Putnam and his family to come forward, please. Come on over. This is a recognition of someone who, just as an average citizen, saw a situation that didn't look right and performed a heroic act. And I want to recognize that because I think we need to elevate that when people do things that are just sort of above and beyond. So let me kind of read the story. On the evening of June 22nd, while taking a walk, Mr. Putnam noticed a puff of smoke coming from a home at the intersection of Rickover and Welch. He hurried toward the house. When he was about a block away, he noticed flames under a pickup truck sitting inside the garage, so he started running toward the house. As he approached, he yelled to someone who he saw sitting in a golf cart, "Call 911. The entire front left panel of the pickup truck was on fire, and so was the front left tire. Smoke from the burning car filled the garage. He ran inside the garage and saw that no one was trapped. At this point, fire had engulfed the pickup and it spread to the car next to it. He ran to the front door yelling, "Fire, get out!" The family quickly rushed out of the house. He ran back to the front yard and met the family to ensure that everyone was indeed out of the house and safe. Minor explosions were erupting, and he ran toward the street outside of the burning garage to direct traffic away from the area. Within minutes, Dallas Fire Rescue arrived. As the first fireman on the scene arrived, Mr. Putnam told him that all the occupants were safely out of the house. He remained on the scene to answer questions until the fire was extinguished. So this was just someone taking a walk. And and so in recognition, we have a little proclamation, and it says, whereas T.J. Putnam acted beyond the call of duty as a resident and came to the aid of a neighbor whose house was burning, and whereas he was willing to run into a dangerous situation completely unaware of what to expect, search for survivors in a smoke-filled home, shepherd a family to safety, and whereas he prevented injury and likely saved the lives of those in the burning house, and whereas these selfless and fearless actions truly exemplify the meaning of courage, now therefore I, Anne Margolin, on behalf of Tom Leppert, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition on Wednesday, September 15, 2010, to P.J. Putnam.
Councilwoman Margolin, thank you very much. I'd like to thank my wife, Carolyn, and my daughter, Kaya, my son, Xavier, for all their love and support, and the good Lord for bringing us here. For me, it was pretty easy. I saw a situation, and I didn't have a lot of time, but I ran into the building. I saw the one thing right there, broke through their fence, which I did apologize, and beat on the door to get them out. But one of the proudest things that I am is of the homeowner themselves. After they were out in the front yard and the gentleman, his wife, and his two small children were safe, he had the restraint to stay out there, and he didn't run back into the burning building to save anything. I was very proud of him. And, you know, for me, it was a quick decision. For him, he had to think about it a bit, and he's a hero also.
Thank you. Mr. Putman and Ms. Margolin, let me just add on and say one thing. Ms. Margolin, thank you for recognizing our super citizen and to the Putman family, and they're taking that picture. Smile now. That's right. Smile now. Here's little Putman, little Xavier. All right. And to Ms. Putman, let me say that when you look for role models and when your children look for role models, they don't have to look far. All they have to do is look up at their dad, and the Putman family, you all are to be commended, and thank you for your leadership.
Our final presentation for this morning is a special one, and I would like to invite to the podium some very special guests, and those are leaders from Iraq who have traveled to be with us and participate in the State Department's International Visitors Leadership Program. This is a three-week program. It began in Washington, D.C. with the purpose of examining the political system and the role of federal, state, and local governments. Now, I hope you figured that out so you can give us a lesson on all of that, too. The visitor program seeks to build a mutual understanding between the United States and other nations through carefully designed professional visits to the U.S. for current and emerging foreign leaders. These visits reflect the visitor's professional interests and support the foreign policy goals of the United States government. Since their arrival, they've had sessions and meetings in Washington, D.C., New York, New Hampshire, Arizona, and now Dallas. The group has had many high-level meetings with officials from the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security, Government Affairs, and National Security Council, State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs, as well as the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. While in Dallas, the delegation will meet with Ambassador Ryan Crocker, State Representative Dan Branch, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, Dallas Press Club, and our own city manager, Mary Sue. We know that all of you, as leaders in Iraq, are doing important work, and we hope that the time in both the United States and Dallas has provided valuable skills to continue to help you to contribute to the people of Iraq. We are honored to have you here, and we appreciate the work that you're doing, and hopefully this experience will lead to more improvements and progress in your country. We wish you the best for a successful program. I would now like to present these special greetings to make each one of you honorary citizens of the city of Dallas. First, to Asim Mohammed Ahmad Al Hubosi. Our second goes to Mayed Majid Hussein Ali. Mahfoud Ali Tamimi. Fred Ahmed. Dr. Amir Mohammed. Dr. Dr. Camille Sadoun. Dr. And last but not least, Mr. Haidir Ziadi.
وشعب مدينة دالاس السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
We would like to say السلام عليكم, peace be unto you, to all the people of this great city Dallas, to the mayor and the council members, everyone present.
باسمي رئيس مجلس محافظة بغداد وباسم إخواني الوفد العراقي من محافظات خمس محافظات مهمة من العراق الحبيب.
On my behalf, on behalf of my colleagues that represent five provinces or states, if one is compared to the United States.
من الرمادي غرب العراق ومن كردستان العراق ومن جنوب وسط العراق من الكربلاء والديوانية.
And this is of course from all parts of Iraq, southwest, east, in all directions, from Ramadi, from Kabula, from of course the northern region as well as Kirkuk.
اسمحوا لي أن أعبر عن شكري وشكر الوفد العراقي لدلس حكومة وشعبا.
And I want to express on behalf of my colleagues as well and myself our appreciation and thanks to all the people of Dallas and the city.
فتحت لنا الفرصة أن نكون من ضمن برنامج الزائر الدولي لنطلع على تجربة الولايات المتحدة الأمريكية في الحكومات المركزية.
We were given an opportunity to take a closer look at the decentralized government and how it works here as far as the federal and state government.
واطلعنا على الحكومات اللامركزية في ست ولايات من ولايات أمريكا.
And we took a look at local government in six cities, states in the United States.
لأننا نتطلع في العراق لبناء عراق جديد وأنتم تعلمون ذلك.
And we are looking to build a new Iraq as you all know.
ونحن بحاجة إلى هذه المسيرة الكبيرة من الحكومات اللامركزية في أمريكا.
And so we do need the experience of what you have here. And this area of decentralized and independent government.
وكانت مدينتكم المحطة الأخيرة لوفد العراق.
And of course, this is our last and best stop here.
وهذه المدينة لها وقع وموقع في نفوس العراقيين.
And this city has a special place in the hearts and souls of many Iraqis.
وتركت أثرا في نفوس الوفد العراقي.
And this has impressed also the delegation to see here for you.
لأننا رأيناها كبيرة في كل شيء.
Because we have seen it that it's big really in everything, in every way.
لأننا لدينا علم واطلاع على تاريخ هذه المدينة الشامخ.
And that's because we have a good idea about the great history of this place of this city.
فشموخها يشبه شموخ العراق.
And so the pride of this city is similar to the pride of the state of Iraq and the people of Iraq.
وهذا القاسم المشترك الأول الذي وجدناه في هذه المدينة.
And this is the common thing between us and it.
فهي مميزة.
So it is a distinguished.
بحكمها.
In the way it governs.
ودستورها.
And its constitution.
وحكومتها المحلية التي أشركت الشعب في اجتماعها المهم وهو.
In this form of government that includes all the people.
وحقيقة نحن مسرورين نجد الحكومة المحلية تكرم أبنائها المبدعين. وقد عملت هذا في بغداد.
and I have done that in Baghdad as well, a city about the same size.
حيث عملت مهرجان وأطلقت عليه شعار بغداد تكرم أبنائها المبدعين. هل تسمحون لي أن أقول اليوم جلست تكرم أبنائها المبدعين؟
And so I called that let's recognize day of recognition of those distinguished citizens of Baghdad. And today, let's say this is what you did. It's about what we did in Baghdad.
القاسم المشترك أو السبب الثاني الذي نحب في هذه المدينة لأن ينتمي إليها الرئيس بوش.
The second denominator, common denominator, in the city that President Bush belongs to.
الذي نكله كل الاحترام والتقدير.
We of course just appreciate him and recognize all that he did for us.
فهو الذي ساعد الشعب العراقي في نيل الحرية.
And that he helped Iraqi people in acquiring freedom.
وكان شجاعا في اتخاذ القرار.
And he was courageous in taking his decision.
ولا نستغرب انه شجاع لانه ينتمي الى دالس.
And now we know why he is so courageous, because he's one of you, a citizen of Dallas.
فصفعته للدكتاتورية في العراق كانت صفعة لكل الدكتاتورية في العالم.
And so the way he dealt with dictatorship was a stand against dictatorship all over the world.
ويحق لكم ان تفتخروا بهذا الرجل الشجاع.
And I think you have the right or the privilege to be proud of such a man.
شكرا جزيلا لاستضافتنا وشكرا جزيلا لانكم منحتمونا هذه التأشيرة الجميلة وهي تعبير عن حبكم وتأييدكم للوفد العراقي.
And thank all of you again for this wonderful honorary citizenship. We will keep that close to our hearts.
شكرا لكم حكومة وشعبا.
Thank you, government and people. Thank you.
Let me give a quick overview of our session this morning. There'll be kind of four different pieces to it. One, as customary, we will begin with our speakers. And since there are a number of speakers that have signed up, we're going to group all of those together. So the first five will have 3 minutes, and then we'll have 2 minutes for everyone else. After that, then, we will go ahead and proceed in to the interview. There's one interview that we need to do for Board and Commission. It happens to be the Ethics Commission. We'll do that interview. Then we'll come back, deal with the various amendments. We started those last Monday, then we'll move forward and try to complete that process today. And then finally, there are several elements of the agenda that are related to the DFW airport. So with that, Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. We have several speakers this morning that have signed up to speak. And also, you should have received several emails from the City Secretary's office from the citizens of Dallas as well. Our first speaker this morning is going to be Lico Reyes, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that first name correctly, and followed by Bill Solomon and Kenneth Cartier, Chris Burns, and Rick Britton. While Ms. Reyes is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council or while attending the city council meeting shall be removed from the room of the sergeant-at-arms and so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. The first five names that I just called will have 3 minutes to speak. You will see the 3 minutes up on the board. You will see a light flash when you have 30 seconds, and then you'll see it flashing for stop. And the additional speakers that I will call will have 2 minutes to speak. Reyes? Mr. Reyes?
My name is Roscoe Betts. I'm here to plead for someone in the city of Dallas to help the unfortunate people that live in the 200 and 300 blocks of Alcalde Street. These people are Hispanic. I have no interest myself. I sold the houses I used to own on Alcalde. But the problem is that the Alcalde Street houses are flooded terribly, not by intense rain, but only and solely 100% by the dark parking garages at 200 North Peak Street dams up the water that comes into above ground. The dark parking garage is built over top of an underground storm sewer, usually an open creek. They built this building right on top of the open creek with no provision at all for excess water flow when the underground storm sewer is full. The first flood came in 1991, 2 years after Dart built the building. And at that time, Dart paid me and my tenants and others in full every dime we asked for damages. They agreed that their building caused a problem by their accident, that their accident where they bored two holes through the back wall of the building to let surface water flow through. The holes were only 8 inches in diameter. They were entirely too small to do any good. The second flood came in 1995, and this time it was worse. The water was 5 feet deep above the floor in the houses on Alcalde. Dart this time opened up three large panels of the back wall, three panels each 20 feet, total of about 60 feet openings, but they immediately, instead of leaving the ground level, they immediately poured cement in the 24 inches deep above the ground. So they've got a dam now, and they put iron bars and fill guard in front. After the next flood came in 2006, this time it flooded us real bad, and Dart offered to pay half of the cost of our damages. I refused to accept my half. I fought Dart tooth and nail from beginning to end, and I refused to accept the half, and instead I sued Dart along with a whole bunch of them did accept the half. But me and four others that did not accept the half sued Dart in small claims court in 2007, and we won, and Dart appealed. And it went to the downtown district court in the Allen building. And we had a trial there. The trial was held in March of this year. And we won again in spite of all the efforts Dart had. There is absolutely absolute evidence that the building caused our trouble. Dart has paid us. But they still refuse to do anything to remedy the problem. And the problem is, all they've got to do is remove that cement they put in the openings, make it down to ground level, and remove the fill dirt that they put in front of it, and remove the iron bars that they put in. If they did, the water could then freely flow through the building. Dart acknowledges this, but it does nothing. I'm hoping that there's somebody here in the city that I can talk to that will look into this and have some kind of sympathy for the poor people that live in those two blocks. As I mentioned earlier, they're Hispanic. They're hardworking people, but they're afraid to get up. They wouldn't do what I'm doing for nothing. They don't want to make no waves at all. They don't want to raise any attention to themselves. They just want to live peacefully as they can. Any help that I can get, I certainly would appreciate it. I've tried and tried and tried.
Sir, we appreciate that. And the conversation on the side with the city manager, I think he clearly identified the issue and outlined it in a very accurate way as far as our understanding. I'm going to suggest offline that you visit with Jill Jordan, who's one of our assistant city managers. Again, I think you've identified that there's some long-term needs there that aren't going to be fixed immediately, but they still clearly have to be addressed. So, Jill, if you would, and Ms. Hunt, I believe you had a comment. Okay. So, Ms. Jordan, if you could get. We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
You ready, Mayor? Bill Salome, followed by Kenneth Cartier, Chris Burns, and Rick Britton.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members. I guess 5 seconds more. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Bill Salamine, former chairman of the Dallas Veterans Day Parade and today's spokesman for our group, the 2010 Dallas Veterans Day Parade Committee. I'm joined by our committee volunteers that are here today. I want to highlight just a few. Colonel Jim Wolf, our chairman. Colonel Ken Cordier, Vietnam POW for 6.5 years. First Sergeant Herman Mendoza, Junior ROTC DISD, and Captain Andy White, U.S. Army Recruiting, and the rest of our group, would you please stand? There's many more committee members, but these are the ones who get away today. Thank you, gentlemen. You know, for 50 years, the city of Dallas was kind of unbelievable, did not have a ceremony or parade. So in 1998, a group of veterans, officers and enlisted, along with the support of the city of Dallas, and we thank you, with in-kind support and also authorizing some funding for several years, put on the first parade at a fair park. But because of budgetary restrictions, this financial support ended. Today, the parade is far from Fair Park. It is now in downtown Dallas with a VIP reception for the mayor, city council, U.S. congressmen, our dignitaries, high corporate executives before the parade. And this is followed by a moving ceremony with a replaying, taps, and a missing man formation flyover. Then the parade follows with 150 entries with military units, military and veterans organizations, over 1,000 junior ROTC cadets, high school bands. Over 20,000 spectators attend. TV interviews, newspaper stories, and media support help publicize not only the parade, but the day itself. A fitting tribute to our military and veterans, especially during this time of conflict. As the parade has grown, now the largest in the Southwest, our expenses have risen as well. For bleachers, comfort stations, decorations, and our highest expense, the police. Last year, $12,000. However, it is difficult for us to raise the $95,000 plus it takes to put on this fitting ceremony and parade. Therefore, today, our committee is asking the City Council to defer the cost of the police support that's needed to direct traffic and assist the parade every year, but also help us with any other funds that are available. And we, all of us, thank you in advance for your patriotic support.
Good morning. Isn't it great to be alive and free? Mayor Leppert and City Council, we thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ken Cordier, and as Bill said, I was in Vietnamese prisons for a little over 6 years. So I know how precious freedom is. And aren't we blessed to have our dedicated and all-volunteer military to protect us and our freedom? We know that it's the military and not the politicians and preachers and reporters and lawyers that guarantee our freedoms. So it's altogether fitting and proper that we have an occasion at least once a year to honor them on their special day. In 1998, myself and a group of other local vets, with the full support of the city, organized the first Dallas Veterans Day parade in nearly 50 years. That was at Fair Park. And since then, the parade has grown, and now we do it at City Hall. And with that growth to 150 marching units, and as Bill said, over 20,000 spectators, our costs have gone way up. Now, initially, the city, the first year, provided the financial support that we needed. But over the next couple of years, that was scaled back as we were able to organize ourselves for fundraising. and able to secure the funding from local donors. Now, in these times of a difficult economy, fundraising has become more of a challenge. And that's why we come to you here today and hope that you'll be able to continue your in-kind support and hope that you'll give favorable consideration to our request to defer the cost of the plea. Thank you.
Chris Burns, followed by Rick Britton, and then I understand Mr. Reyes is in the audience to speak.
Good morning. You can reference your handout, I believe, that you received regarding the Belo Garden Wall. I'm Chris Burns. I represent concerned downtown residents regarding the proposed 12-foot tall, 200-feet long wall in the construction of Belo Garden. First and foremost, thank you to the city and Belo for their investment in this park. It's a fantastic addition, with the exception of this major design flaw. A 12-foot tall, 200-foot long wall at the east end of Belo Garden adjacent to the Metropolitan Drive. It's our understanding this design is for the protection of the visitors to the park from vehicles using the drive from an exhaust and traffic perspective. This wall is overkill. We figure it's 8 feet taller than necessary. Major highways have 3 to 4 foot barriers. A 4 foot barrier is all we need in this low speed drive. Pollution from the vehicles in this drive is minimal compared to Griffin, Main, and Commerce, the other surrounding streets, which don't have a wall in the design. The blind spot created by this wall poses great risk to pedestrians and vehicles maneuvering around the wall to merge onto these streets. The city will ultimately inherit this problem and the liability of collisions between the two. This wall creates a hiding place for activity that does not want to be seen and will not be deterred by lighting or camera. This wall will become a canvas for graffiti, which again the city will inherit in the future. This wall will be an architectural blunder, and eventually the city will be left cleaning up problems for many generations. Trash, crime, even dog walkers not picking up the waste hidden by this wall. Many downtown residents are very upset and say it is simple as the design doesn't fit into what the city downtown is trying to do for the downtown community. The wall is expensive, and while Velo has suggested changing it is more expensive, the numbers have not been released to us. We figure based on ours, this cannot be the case, and we most importantly figure they're not factoring in the long-term cost incurred by the city from future problems. In conclusion, a 12-foot tall wall along with 26 parkside trees creates a haven for undesirable activities, a shelter for homeless and transients, a large canvas for graffiti, but most importantly, an obstacle to visibility for police and good citizens. A 4-foot wall will accomplish the goal of protection without adding the problem of danger. Thank you in advance for your assistance in lowering this wall. Thanks, Mayor, City Council. Appreciate it. Yes. Thank you.
Rick Britton, followed by Mr. Reyes.
Hello, I'm Rick Britton. I won't take all of my 3 minutes. I thought we were collectively allotted that amount of time. So, but I do want to reiterate a couple of things. As Chris had mentioned, we are extremely grateful as downtown citizens that this park is being developed on behalf of, you know, Velo and the downtown city council. We very much thank you. Our concern really lies with this wall and the fact of the height of the wall being the concern from a safety perspective, graffiti perspective, and so on. We truly are here asking this council to help us in discussions with Velo and the designing of the park and the specific designing of this wall to open negotiations and open discussions to bring this wall down to an acceptable level. That's really the objective of us being here today. There are a number of other folks within the community that are interested in getting this wall lowered, and it's probably, I'm sure, won't be the last time you've heard from many of us. So hopefully you can help us, and we look forward to moving forward on this. Thank you very much.
Mr. Reyes.
I appreciate your consideration due to the unforeseen circumstances of meeting up here instead of at our usual place. I do understand that you're worried about security. I was concerned that the invocation was done in the name of God and Jesus Christ, and the constituents that pay taxes were not privy to the rest of the meeting. But thank you for allowing me to come up. The police officer told me to be downstairs, so that's what I did because I'm an obedient person. My name is Rico Reyes. I'm with the North Texas Public Employees Association, part of the USW, United States Steelworkers. I come before you today to consider that you reconsider the layoffs and pay cuts of your civilian employees as they are proposed. I ask that you look deeper into the budget to find other avenues to close the gap. While I understand that a number of you have worked hard, and I've been in 5 of your meetings, on amendments, I still think we need further adjustments to reduce the loss of jobs and pay to your largest group of employees. The proposed budget is not as fair as it could be to civilian employees. I hope that you understand that un-uniformed employees cannot carry out their jobs and duties without the work of the civilian employees. So uniformed and un-uniformed employees have got to work together. Allow me to give you some examples. Without the civilian employees, water does not flow freely through the water pipes. Civilian employees are there working 24/7 at a number of water treatment plants, ensuring the integrity of the water pressure and quality to the firefighters. Civilian employees are there working to call at call centers, ensuring that calls for emergency responders get routed to the proper authorities. Civilian employees maintain the emergency response vehicles, the fuel stations, the contamination systems used to direct those emergency responders. Civilian employees in some circumstances have jobs that a large number of other citizens would not do, such as climbing into those dirty, nasty manholes, trenches, and make repairs to water flowing. Working in some of these cities' smelliest, dirtiest, and most hazardous positions, and it is all a day's work for our civilian employees who do it without grudging. As a number of you know, a large number of civilian employees live in the city of Dallas. They could not have decided other than the city of Dallas because this is where they want to be. This is their home. It is important to them. They have vested interest in ensuring that they not only provide a good service, but that their families, their neighbors also receive the same quality services and quality of life. You currently have city employees who cannot afford health coverage themselves or their families. They qualify for subsidized housing. An unfairly large burden is being placed on the shoulders of the city employees in the proposed budget. I know that we're looking to rectify that. It is selectivity unfair to the largest group of your employees. The North Texas Association of Public Employees, which I represent, and we're at 1408 North Washington Avenue, Suite 202. We applaud much needed reform on the taxes to city services. We regret that this was necessary, but let us remember what this does and where it goes. This tax increase would have been prevented if the council's past and present had not overborrowed and overindulged in removing large swaths of productivity. A concept that does not work. Ladies and gentlemen, I beg of you, please. And today at 4:30, we will be marching and demonstrating on behalf of a positive, proactive solution to the budget for the largest group of civilian employees.
Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. God bless you all. Thank you so much.
James Price, Elaine Thompson, Daniel Carrazzo. I'm sorry, sir. Did I call your name? Oh, okay.
Please.
No, if I called your name, please come forward and speak. You have 2 minutes to speak.
Good
state your name for the record. Okay.
First of all, I would like to say good morning to the city council. My name is Ali Thompson. How did I get 154 for the 3 minutes?
We did 3 minutes, the first five, which is usual.
Oh, no, yeah, 2 minutes.
Yes, 2 minutes, sir.
Okay. Can we start over, please? I'll start over, please.
Just keep going.
Okay. Like I say, my name is Ali Thompson. I'm from the sanitation department. I work out of District 5. And I'm here to speak for people that work in the sanitation department as their representatives. And the people sent me here to say they urge the city council, we urge you. Those 8 furlough days is going to hurt us very bad. It's going to take away from our retirement. We're going to lose money. We can't go on vacation. We couldn't go on vacation in the first place the way we wanted to. We can't. The people in the sanitation department are tired of having to take a vacation. They have to stay home because they can't afford it. We can't afford to take a 3% cut in our pay. It's not going to work. But we urge the city council to try and find other means to come up with the money that we need to alleviate some of those furlough days. At least one, at least 2 days. We need some of those days. Okay, then you got the 9 cents on the cans, from the cans. That's $240,000. We're urging the city councilman to leave that money within the sanitation department so the sanitation department can put it in for some kind of good use, be it in another department. As long as we can help somebody, the people that's getting rifted, we can put that money there. But the people in the sanitation department, again, we urge you, please, consider those 8 days, cut those days down some kind of way. But we have to take the 8 days, but we're losing too much. And we appreciate you.
Is Mr. Price in the audience? Daniel Carraza? Nelda Schultz?
Thank you very much, and thank you to the mayor and honorable council members. I am Nelda Schultz. I've lived on Montego Plaza since 1996. I don't have a special interest except that of the general population of Dallas, Texas, and the economic community that supports me. Someone years ago said much better than I that brevity is the soul of wit. I will be brief, but I don't think this is a very witty matter. It's very serious, and the Dallas Morning News would have us to believe that the decision is made. That there's little reason for us to even be here to address you. I beg you, please open your mind. Look at cities from L.A. to Chicago to New York, the cities that have continued to raise taxes. And what's happened? They've lost people. They've lost businesses. They've killed the goose that laid the golden egg. Also, look at neighboring cities, Plano, Frisco, they're holding the line. Might we lose businesses to them? Possibly. 68% of the population of the United States are saying no more taxes. Hold the line. This is difficult, but as the sign says downstairs when you enter the building, we can do it better together. It's painful, but we know how. Those of us over 40 were taught how to do it. We tighten our belts. We live through the difficulties in anticipation of a brighter day. And it will happen. Thank you very much.
Next speaker is Susan Marseille. Susan Marseille. Myron Newsom.
My name is Byron Knutson. I'm a leader with Dallas Air Interface. Good morning, Mayor and Council people. DA is urging the city to hire more police officers above attrition to continue our progress on reducing crime. It is necessary that we refill the pipeline that is being used to put more officers on patrol this coming year. The City Council set a goal of 3 officers per 1,000 citizens. You have made great progress towards that goal and seen crime go down as a result of it. It is understandable that we need to slow the rate of hiring in these hard economic times, but the proposed budget cuts are too deep. Hiring only half of attrition would leave us with a net loss of officers in later years and take us backward instead of forward towards our goal. We support a tax increase for officers first to pay for reinstatement of money for proposed salary reduction and the addition of 100 officers above the attrition rate. This would not be in violation of the agreement that you have with the Dallas Police Association. DIA also supports a further tax rate increase for other essential services that enhance our quality of life and attract business and new citizens. Finally, due to the decrease in appraised value, DIA believes that all this can be accomplished without an increase in the aggregate total property taxes paid by most citizens. Thank you.
Senator Washington.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm very grateful for the opportunity today to speak before you on behalf of Quest, Dallas, and Collins. I'm grateful for the program because without the program, I would not have been able to enroll at El Central College, where I'm currently enrolled as a two-year degree program in nursing. Prior to coming to Dallas 5 years ago, I lived in New Orleans, Louisiana, so I am therefore a survivor of Katrina. I want to say now thank you to the City of Dallas for all of the assistance that you have given myself and others like myself. I come today to plead with you to ask if you and ask your help and your assistance in continuing this program. Without the program, I could not continue my nursing degree, which I started prior to coming to Dallas. When I entered El Centro at that time, because of some physical challenges that I had, because of some other tragedies that had occurred in my life, I was not able to continue the program. Dallas, Quest of Dallas has allowed that opportunity for me. It pays for my books, my tuition, pays for transportation. I have a counselor who stays with me all the time, who calls me, checks on my progress, offers whatever assistance that I need. This program is very well. It's a great program to help unemployed, underemployed, underskilled, and displaced people as myself. So I ask that you would aid us in assisting with the $50,000 that we need to keep this program going so that others like myself may benefit. This program offers budgeting skills, stress management skills. It helps me in my studying to assure my success in the program. My desire is to become an RN and thereafter become a nurse practitioner. And without this program, it would not have been made possible. I thank you for your time. I thank you for the assistance that we know that you all are going to give us. Thank you so much.
Our next speaker is Nancy Reagan. Kay Weeks is followed.
Thank you, Mayor Leppard, members of the City Council. My name is Nancy Reagan. I'm a property owner and I live in Mr. Tocine. And I'm here to respectfully express my opposition to the proposed property tax increase. Property values are falling, sales tax revenues are declining, and one way or another, every single Dallas citizen is impacted by the current financial crisis. I surveyed my subdivision and other subdivisions, and I did not receive one single vote in support. I understand this is not an easy choice for you, but real estate agents are seeing more and more people struggling to pay their mortgages and others not selling their homes because of lost value and declining equity. These are not your media-covered pre-foreclosure people. These are hard-working citizens who are tightening their belts to meet their restrictions. This budget amendment that has been proposed will cause no dire circumstances to befall the city. It is a belt-tightening approach to budget management, very same much the belt-tightening that many homeowners and small businesses are now doing just to survive. Please face the financial realities that property owners are facing. The amended budget is a fair and equitable proposal that will ultimately benefit everyone. We're fortunate that businesses are moving here, but if they see property taxes increasing, they will think twice. And the citizens who move here do not have to live in Dallas County. All of our surrounding counties have substantially lower property rates. There is an article in the paper suggesting that the rich will pay more taxes than can fund the budget. This is far from the truth. 1.3 million people live in Dallas County. The average median value of the home is $220,000 to $240,000. These are the people who will pay the bills. Please, do this. Reconsider your vote, reconsider the facts, and do this for the people. Thank you.
Kay Weeks, followed by Jeff Gatlin.
Good morning, Mayor Leppert and members of the City Council. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this morning. My name is Kay Weeks. I live at 5935 Lufkin Drive in Dallas. I've been a realtor in Dallas for over 20 years and currently serve as the president of the Metrotex Association of Realtors, an organization representing over 13,000 realtors throughout the city of Dallas, plus Dallas, Rockwall, Kaufman, Collin, and Tarrant counties. Our main office is located at 8201 North Stemmons Freeway in Dallas. As a Dallas resident and as a realtor, I am opposed to the tax increase being proposed at this time. The Metrotex Association of Realtors is also opposed. While it is true that the housing market in North Texas has fared better than those in Las Vegas, Phoenix, South Florida, and other parts of the country, homeowners here still have seen the value of their homes decline since 2007. As of last month, the number of sales of single-family homes in the city of Dallas has declined an average of 8% since the start of the year. The Dallas area unemployment rate sits at 8.5%, more than twice of what it was in August of 2007, and there is no sign of it improving over the next 6 months. Jobless homeowners and those on fixed incomes from all parts of the city are having a tougher time making ends meet. As a consequence, foreclosures and short sales are prevalent throughout many neighborhoods of our city. Our nation is experiencing unprecedented uncertainty regarding the national economy. The private sector has tightened itself, cutting costs to meet the reality of this new economy. Smaller business people like realtors have seen their incomes drop dramatically over the last 2 years. They, too, have had to cut their expenses to survive. Is it too much to ask the city of Dallas to do the same? Thank you very much.
Next speaker is Jeff Gatlin, followed by Peter Urichia.
Hello, I'm Jeff Gatlin. I'd like to excuse my long hair. I made a vow to myself that I wouldn't cut it till I'm debt free, and I'd like to say that at this rate, it's going to take me an extreme long time. I'm going to have hair down to my knees, and I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous up here. I just don't understand. I'm supposed to teach my kids how to save money, work hard, be a good Boy Scout, volunteer at school, volunteer with the elderly, give free time, son, give free time, daughter. I ask them to pick up trash that's not theirs. I ask them to clean up things that aren't theirs. I ask them to work hard. We don't give allowance at my house. We make them fill out an invoice for work besides their chores. And I don't understand why grown people, and I appreciate everything the city council does, but I don't think I could say it better than Nancy or Miss Weeks, that, you know, when is the city of Dallas going to understand that people can't afford to keep paying more? At some point, you have to pull up your bootstraps and go to work, no matter what part of the city it's in. And I don't understand why that some of the senior citizens that have fought in the war have their house payment. They finally hit the third year. They pay their house off, and they finally get a little bit of relief. find out that their tax bill is more than their mortgage payment was. So I would like to see that not only keep the taxes the way they are, but we should figure out a way to lower them before the property values go down even more. Anyhow, thank you for everything you've done, City Council.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Peter Arutria. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metro Texas Association of Realtors. As President K. Week said, I represent 13,000 residential realtors over the North Texas area. We oppose this property tax increase for various reasons, and more importantly, for economic reasons, and most importantly, because it increases the cost of owning property. It increases the cost of home ownership. As Dallas is to compete in the global economy, it is imperative that it be competitive. An increase in taxes is strategically not the thing to do. In the real estate market that right now that is as volatile as it's ever been, it would be unprecedented to set a tax rate on an unsustainable revenue source. Right now, given the economic climate, is not the time to raise taxes. It should not be done. We ask that this council come together, work together, find a solution, short-term and long-term. As our members discussed this at length and sat down and said, we cannot support a tax increase. People move here from out of state, and it's very, very attractive. Texas has no state income tax. But then they look at their property tax bill, and to say that they are shocked is an understatement. We do not need that, not at this particular time. We are in a competitive environment, and we're not competing with our suburbs. We are competing, as I said, with markets across the country. And we have to be on a level playing field. And I ask this council again to strongly reconsider this. We will come to the table. We will work with you. But please, at all costs, at this particular time, we cannot support a property tax increase. Thank you for your time.
Lisa Waygood, followed by Donna Stern, Jennifer Delgado.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa Waygood, and I live on the 25th floor of the Metropolitan Building on Main Street. I'm here today to discuss the Belo Garden, specifically the 12-foot wall. I grew up here in McKinney. I went to Texas A&M for my bachelor's degree in economics and came back to Dallas to begin my career. My first 7 years I spent at Texas Instruments, and I also worked on an MBA from SMU. My last 3 years I worked at Dean Foods. You'll know them locally as the Oak Farms and the Shep's Dairy Plant. And I worked for our corporate headquarters as a finance manager. My husband Neil and I moved to downtown Dallas in January, and we were ready to embrace the area's great walks for proximity to the arts, as well as the readily available public transportation. Most days I ride the DART to our headquarters at City Place on Blackburn and 75. Neil and I often walk to the farmer's market to shop. We dine in the Bishop Arts District, and we ride our bikes to the end of the Katy Trail and back on the weekends. We love to have yogurt at the Lily Pad snack shop at the Main Street Garden in the evenings. We are the ideal dual-income, property tax-paying, good citizens working and promoting living in downtown Dallas. We encourage our friends and coworkers to do the same. All that said, ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem. Just outside my front door, there is a project in works to develop a beautiful park, except for that beautiful park's design currently includes a 12-foot wall. For you history buffs out there, yes, that is the same height as the Berlin Wall. Please close your eyes and imagine you are inside your home. Now, when you open that front door and 10 steps in front of you, there is now a 12-foot wall. How does this feel to you? Is this how you want your home to feel? Is this what you want your friends and families to experience? Well, my city council people, neither do we. Angela, I read about your world travels and the lessons you learned and hope to bring back to build out downtown Dallas. I, too, have traveled to places like Seattle, Chicago, New York City, Frankfurt, Munich, London, Paris, Venice, Buenos Aires, Mumbai, and Hyderabad. In all of my travels and all of the walks through all of these city parks, I don't ever remember any giant walls that blocked out the very people these parks were intended to entice. Today, I'd like to take you back many years and borrow the words of our President Ronald Reagan and leave you by saying, ladies and gentlemen of the Dallas City Council, tear down this wall.
think. Oh. Well, I have a very quick comment that I want to make. Just this young lady who just spoke, I'd like to step out with you for just 1 second. I spoke to some of the other folks who were here about that, and just to let you know, a couple of years ago, I worked with BLO, talked with the folks who currently own the Metropolitan to try to get them to make that corridor, that street, turn it into pedestrian bicycle only. The owners at that time wouldn't budge. We're going to try to work it out for you. So I'm going to step in the hallway and tell you a little bit more about it, okay?
Next speaker, please.
Hi. Thank you for hearing me today. My name is Donna Starnes. I'm a CPA, a certified financial planner, a native Texan, and proud to have lived in Dallas since 1980. I'm against the 6.5% property tax increase. Dallas is a city with many advantages for businesses. People come to Dallas from all over the world for jobs and to create wealth. Businesses grow and thrive, and entrepreneurs and large businesses alike, like Mark Cuban, Encore, are very generous because of this prosperity. But it's a fragile balance. We are competing not just with other large cities, but with smaller nearby communities like Plano, Highland Park, Addison, to name a few. We haven't raised Dallas property taxes in over a decade, I believe, but if we do it now, aren't we getting ourselves into a familiar trap? Spending in good times and increasing taxes when times are rough. But it's not a temporary increase. It never is it? What happens if the economy continues to decline? Will we increase taxes again? In the meantime, other cities that make different decisions may gain the advantage. Are we really willing to trade precious jobs and new businesses for extra exercise classes, more pool time, shorter grass, and a few extra movies at the library? Is it right to listen to a few louder voices while ignoring the long-term good for all Dallas citizens? Instead, how about coming up with some creative ways to cut expenses? Somehow Dallas came up with a creative solution for the 4th of July celebration that we couldn't really afford. I was at the Fritz Park budget meeting, and we learned that the manager-employee ratio was 4-1. Shouldn't we look at that more carefully and apply some job analysis techniques to see if we need that many managers? Is our budget structurally sound as to employee benefits and pensions? Will it survive another bad year, or will we be in this trap again next year? I support Mayor Leffert's proposal to keep from increasing property taxes. Please vote against the Dallas property tax valuation rate increase.
Jennifer Delgado. Renee Taken. Jim Rickhouse. And Joe Pena.
Hi, my name is Renee Taken, and I live at 4923 Ellensburg in Dallas. I'm not a professional speaker. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have a self-employed husband. And so I'm a CPA by nature, or by past work experience. And needless to say, I work on my family budget, and I go through my family budget. And yes, it is very tough to go through and cut out things that we enjoy. And sometimes we even have to go as far as cut out things that are probably what I would put under the category of need. I do not support the tax hike, and I don't understand why, since Mayor Leffert has come up with a good alternative to the tax hike, why we can't support maybe a tighter budget. The way I see it is that, you know, if you can't be fiscally responsible in hard times, then how can you be fiscally responsible in prosperous times? So if you raise that tax and then things come back, which I think if we're fiscally responsible now, Dallas will probably resume a prosperous time quicker, that possibly with a higher tax rate, then are you going to just turn around when things are prosperous and we have more money to spend more money then? I think it would be to our benefit to be more fiscally responsible now and look to the better times in the future. I don't really think that it's going to be forever. Thank you for your time.
Jim, in Rickhouse. Joe Pena.
My name is Joe Pena. I'm a small property owner in the city of Dallas. I just came here to give my few brief moments to air my views. I still cannot understand why the city council has rejected Mayor Leppard's proposal to hold the line on the current budget and still offer some of the hard choices that had to be made within the budget. I just can't understand it. I see all the city of Dallas is doing. Every time we have a budget shortfall, the immediate prospect is just to go ahead and increase taxes. I have a feeling the next time we have a budget crisis, most of us will be back here again for another budget increase. I think the city council needs to make the hard choices. We need to hold the line and start making the hard choices. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, sir. We appreciate it. That completes the speakers that were signed up. What we'll do now, if you would, is go to the agenda. And there is the first item is the approval of minutes of the September 1st City Council. That's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, order. With that, Madam Secretary, can I turn to you, and we'll go ahead and read the boards and commissions and then go into the interview.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Hotso is prepared to introduce our interviewees this morning,
that.
And she... Ms. Hotso, you wanted to come on in right now.
Yes. Please, thank you. Thank you, colleagues. My nominee for the Ethics Advisory Commission that now has a vacant position for on place 5 is Paula Rosales. Paula is currently an assistant district attorney for the Dallas County District Attorney's Office. She represents the state of Texas in appellate court. She has been very involved in city organizations. She lives in District 14, but nominated by District 1. So I will now let Paula tell you about herself, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Good morning, council members and Mr. Mayor. My name, again, Paula Rosales. Thank you, Ms. Hassel, for the introduction. If I should start with my background, I was born in Guatemala, and through my parents' work, they did human rights and worked to in that area. I was fortunate to live in Mexico and in Canada. And I was also fortunate to grow up surrounded by books and discussions, and it is as a result of that I became a lawyer. Being, as you may know, a lawyer, the ethics of a lawyer are fundamental to the rule of law. They are therefore fundamental to democracy, and It is an honor to be here and to have been nominated for this position. And as a rise of these books, I believe two of my favorite philosophers include Plato and Kant. These would be some of the few that I would be following during my review or my participation in the AAC. One of my favorite Kant classic quotes are, if the choice that we make cannot be a universal law, then we may not want to make that choice. As far as ethics, I believe public affairs are being able to be conducted because the electorate has chosen to give you the trust and as officials, and therefore this trust must be guarded by making virtuous choices as opposed to vicious choices. And by reviewing the rules of procedure of your ethics code, you can definitely see that all of these concepts have been recognized. And this stringent duty of being virtuous in choices has to be restored if it is violated. And it is restored by applying justice, and the code provides for this. So this is how I will essentially participate as a member in this committee. And as far as continuing on the background, my grandparents, my parents have instilled in me working hard and being just hard worker, you know, and it's essentially what I will be bringing to this committee. Accountability and transparency will definitely be what a couple of the things that will drive my review of anything that comes on my desk.
Thank you very much for coming, and Ms. Hassel, thank you very much for the nomination. I'd like to know a little bit, maybe some community service. Have you been involved in the community?
I've been involved in different ways. Right, currently, I am coaching the Irma Rangel Leadership, Young Women's Leadership High School, their mock trial team. So I get to do that and see these bright young girls advocate for their position. I am currently the co-chair to the Public Service and Pro Bono Committee at the Dallas Hispanic Bar Association. Recently, a couple of weeks ago, I must say, we organized at Mountain View College, there was a free legal forum where we invited four experts, board certified in different areas, and this was a free service for the community. They could ask questions, and this is one of the few things. I've also worked on, if you may recognize this, other Southwestern voters registration and registrating voters, explaining to them what their rights are when they are eligible to vote.
Those are commendable. How ironic, this morning I went to speak at the Irma Rangel Leadership School for Young Women, and they are extraordinary young girls that will become well-educated women and our future leaders. So I commend you for giving of your time to that school, a Dallas Independent School District school that I think that all of us need to take part and bring our leadership to the Dallas Independent School District that will, to me, will bring an educated workforce that will eventually help our city. I'm going to open up for questions. Anyone on this side? Councilmember Mark Olin, please.
Good morning, and thank you so much for being here. About a year ago, the City Council worked very hard to develop an enhanced ethics ordinance. Have you had a chance to read it?
The enhanced ethics ordinance, amendment?
It's our current ethics ordinance, but we changed it about a year ago. So whatever, have you had a chance to look at it in its current form?
I have had a chance to look at it.
And so, you know, this body is governed, and much of our ethics is governed by that ethics ordinance along with the state ethics ordinance. And so while I'm sure that there are certain things that would be open to interpretation, are you comfortable working with that ordinance as the basis for the decisions and for the basis of your thinking?
Absolutely. It's there, and I know that it is a evolving document as well. The other members have incredible backgrounds, and I believe that Mr. Skinner, being the chair for a couple of terms, I believe, will be able to direct any situation if it is not addressed already.
Right. I mean, that's where we would have interpretation, but often you can find at least some guidance from our ordinance.
Yes.
Thank you.
Margo. Mr. Gadane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Ms. Armanda?
How do you pronounce your last name?
Aldana.
Aldana.
Yes, sir.
It's Aldana. Did you do your studying here in the U.S.? Where did you go to school?
I did, yes, sir. I went to Southern Methodist University. I got to my corporate communications and public affairs degree there. I went to Texas Wesleyan School of Law in Fort Worth, but I did commute every day, so I've been living in Dallas since I've been here, sir.
How many years have you been in?
I've been here close to 11 years.
That's great. Are you specializing? Do you specialize in your field?
Yes. Most of my days require intense reading on complex areas of law, mainly criminal law, I write briefs for a living, essentially presenting the position of the state to the Court of Appeals.
Okay. That's all I have, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming down here. I can sense you're a little nervous before us today. I think maybe that's probably a good thing because you realize the enormity of the position and the importance of the position. And I would encourage you to have conversations perhaps with the past chair of the Ethics Committee or Rebecca Bergstresser so that you can get a full understanding of how the Ethics Commission works and how they have continued to add more definition to the ethics policies that they have. And I just think it would be a good idea for you to understand completely how it began and when it began and how we have added to it and so on and so forth. I think that would be, especially since you like to read and you like to quote philosophers and, you know, you didn't quote Socrates, my favorite one, but that's okay. Well, I like Plato too. And if you got into existentialism, we were going to have to stop the conversation. But I do think, there you go. I do think that you seem to me to be a very thoughtful person, and I think that is probably a good quality for this position. Someone who will really study the detail of it and understand how it was constructed and what the necessities are for actually bringing a case forward and so on and so forth. There are, for those of us who have been here a long time, it's frustrating in some parts and it's wonderful in other parts, okay? And I think that's probably true of any document of that nature. And I think it would bode well if you would go and review some of the history of it with some of the more tenured members and probably those that have rolled off as well. So I appreciate your willingness. It is a very complex, and it takes a person who will be studious at it. So I appreciate that quality that you have because I think that the people, especially Rebecca Bergstresser, and I don't know if you know her or not, she was very studious in her reading and always looking at that document and referring back to that document. And so I think your studiousness will really help in that respect. So I appreciate you, Ms. Hoffer, bringing this young woman to us. And are we going to be able to vote on her today? Okay.
We're ready to vote.
Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. If you have no other questions, just my comment is that she's obviously very nervous. But you can tell by her background that she's very studious. She knows the law. She writes briefs for a living. So I think it's a win-win for us. So I'd like to make the motion to accept the nomination of Rosa, Apollo Rosales Aldana.
There's a motion on the floor now by Council Member Paco. Ms. Coop, are you okay?
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the item number 3, which is authorize an aircraft exhibition or flight to be conducted in conjunction with the Boy Scouts of America 100th Anniversary Centennial Camporee and approval of the licensee agreement between the Circle 10 Council of the Boy Scouts of America and the city for the use of certain land contained on the Dallas Executive Airport for the period October 29, 2010 through October 31st, 2010. Madam Mayor, I understand at 11 a.m. that the council has a event to attend, and so yes, ma'am. Yes, you're to meet on L1 Green. I'm looking at John. L1 Green, normal location for the yes, ma'am, at 11. There are two bands, and I don't know one leads.
What?
One at 11:15 and one at 11:45. Same location, L1 Green.
Are you going to the early one, or are you going
yes,
to the one?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Mr. Mayor, we've completed everything up to the briefing.
And we've got 15 minutes, 20 minutes?
Yes. Yes, 30. We do.
Why don't we just go ahead and break? Let's just break and we'll pick it up after.
Okay. The council's in recess at 10:51 and meeting at the band at 11:15, L1, and 11:30.
Let's call our session in order. There are still two pieces of business that we've got to deal with. One is the amendments, and my plan is to go through those now. Second are issues related to DFW, and then after that, we're going to have a relatively short executive session. No executive session. So we'll just do those two, and we'll bring the agenda to a close. If I could, I'd like to ask each one of you to go with me to the memorandum that the city manager sent to us in the date of September 14th for kind of the package of the amendment. First thing I'm going to do is literally walk through page by page and just make sure that everybody is in agreement. Okay, and if you need another copy, Mary's got a copy of it. But go through each one and make sure, first of all, that the actions we took on Monday are understood and those people are still comfortable with them, then there's a couple of new ones we need to do. So with that, if you would, turn to page 1 with me. That was the one that had to do with the $1.8 million. That is actually encompassed in the larger amendment that was proposed to increase the taxes. Although that's not mentioned within it, the monies are being spent in that regard. That was fine. Then on page 2, the question was the use of the $800,000. There was an amendment to utilize the commercial paper program fees for the EMS settlement. That was not accepted. We'll get to where it was accepted in just a moment. On the boards and commissions, now this was not a cost item, although as we pointed out, it does free up resources from the city manager staff. The action was to accept that. As we talked about the Youth Affairs Commission, this was somewhat of a cleanup. We did say the future alternative, that would be brief to quality of life. So, Mr. Grano, I think you're going to run with that. On page 4 was the larger amendment on the tax increase. On page 5 was the amendment having to do with the office and travel budget. That source is nearly $64,000. What was agreed to is it would be split in two buckets, the use of that $64,000. One was the Veterans Day Parade, $20,000, and then the library materials are $43,665. Please, let's just question the answers at this point. We're going to go back. Well, it just helps the people listen. On page one, the $1.8 million was, that one is already encompassed, although it's not identified, it is already encompassed in the larger amendment that was proposed to increase the taxes. Because if you look at those numbers, you're $1.8 million short for accomplishing some of the elements attached to the parks and recreation. So that one, in effect, is already dealt with.
But wouldn't that be in Mary's proposed budget?
No, the $1.8 million came after her proposed budget.
That's a donation, right?
No, it is not. The $1.8 million is additional revenue from the land sale.
Oh, okay,
that
came
afterwards.
Right.
Now, that $1.8 million, through all the conversation, was kind of either consciously or unconsciously put towards parks and recreation.
Right.
If you look at the amendment, if you'll turn to me on page four, to accomplish the things that are in there, which in essence is item number 11, recreation centers at fiscal year 2009-2010, that $2.2 million number is not the right number. The right number is $4 million. And what they did is just not include the $1.8 million landfill because there was an assumption there. So that's why I say that $1.8, it is an amendment that was put forward by the city manager, but in effect is already spent to accomplish the objective of number 11 on page 4. Is that clear?
Yes.
Ideally, what you should show is if you go to page 4, line 11 should be $4 million. Then the uses of the fund should not be just $39,479. That is the amount of the proposed tax increase, the 4.91. There should be another line that says landfill revenue of $1.8 million.
Right.
That would describe it more accurately. But again, I think through all the conversations, there was either conscious or unconsciously, it was put towards that. Okay? Please. However you want to do it. That's all I'm trying to make clear. So that one is already done.
You'll have to add the revenues on the other one on line 4, on page 4 too. You've got to add the landfill revenues plus the rec centers on page 4 to get all of that.
That's why I say that the number of 11 should be $4 million. Line 11 should be $4 million, and then you've got, in effect, another, although you don't have a uses here, the assumption of the uses was the 4.91 increase. That plus the 1.8 then will total, which will roughly be $41,279,000 on both uses and sources. Okay? Okay. Then again, to repeat, on page 2, the amendment on the $800,000, which was the commercial paper program fees, identified as savings after the city manager proposed her budget. That was the proposed for the settlement. That was not accepted. We'll get back to it in a moment. On page three, although that's not a cost element, those were all accepted, understanding that it does free up resources in the city manager's office. The only question, and again it was on the Youth Commission, which for all practical purposes was sunsetted a year ago. This was a cleanup, and we agreed that the future of it, whatever form it takes in the future, e.g. outside the city, the Quality of Life Committee will work with that, since Madrona has already indicated she's running with that. Page 4, please. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, put the two of those together.
Yeah. Please. All we are doing is the Youth Affairs Commission, for all practical purposes, was sunset a year ago. There were questions raised on what could you do to engage a similar piece of it. A similar Youth Affairs Commission, realized that it wouldn't be a city-chartered one, but nevertheless try to do something within the community. You remember the discussion, there could be another group out there that will work on it. We could kind of reformulate or reconfigure with some other organization not identified. We agreed that that would go back to Ms. Medrano and her committee to basically discuss, formulate options, and if necessary, come back. It may not be necessary to come back. It may be something of simply working with an outside organization, and they run it. I'm afraid, Ms., we discussed it on Monday.
Yeah.
Oh, Monday, it was a long discussion. No, this will not be any fun. So what it's going to be is Ms. Medrano's going to have to work with this with no funds, and that, again, was the thought of an outside organization that may want to take this up. So, again...
in each district, because we don't have this youth
affairs commission anymore, then you open the door to each and every one of us to put somebody on that.
And I have no qualm with that. My only thing is that if we're going, for that type of discussion is totally different from city governance. And if we to bring it before the committee brings the city back into it, if we're going to govern it, I'm saying that, and I have a problem with you said you should come for all of the committee and the city council to make folks aware of what's happening and what the intent
right.
is. So I have a problem with that. I just want to make sure that we don't have the governing hand over something that we are sunsetting, taking our hands out of,
right.
but still we're still coming back in.
Because this is a 501c3, am I right?
Absolutely.
It's a 501c3. So we don't have to have anybody. As a council member, I don't have to put anybody
Absolutely.
A part of that. Okay.
Ms. Hutton, do you want to make a comment?
I remember when we had this discussion and Mr. Caraway stepped up to the plate. You pulled in sponsors. You organized. You reached out. I remember you reached out to each and every one of us saying, how do you want to be involved? Do you
right.
want someone from your district, a youth, to be involved in this? And so my preference is for you to keep that ball in your court.
Right.
I don't see why we would want to have any administration over that, any city involvement in that, when you have already run with that. So that's my take on it. So I would suggest we leave it as it is, and that would be my suggestion.
All right, and I welcome this view. We'll bring it to court. All right, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, I think the goal was just to give a forum where people could discuss it and find it interesting. Okay, moving rapidly on. Page 4, we talked about the kind of reconfiguration of 1.8. Page 5, the issue is on the sources, the reduction of the council office and travel budget, that's $63,000. Rather than library materials, we amended it and accepted it at $20,000 would be used for the Veterans Day Parade. And $43,000 would be used for library materials. Ms. Hawthorne?
Yes. My question on this was, $20,000 was going to the Veterans Day Parade. I would like to amend this with $23,000 going to a Quest and DAI program, Dallas Area Interface, and the rest can go to library materials.
It would be $23,000 to the Dallas Area Interface and $20,000 to the library. Okay. Okay, we'll come back to it. Let's just leave it here now and let's get through to where we were and then we'll come back. Okay, so then we accepted that. We kind of got an amendment to amendment. We'll come back to that in just a minute. If you'll go with me to page 6. Page 6 was the $800,000 of the savings from the commercial paper program. Remember earlier, it was proposed as part of the EMS settlement. That was not accepted. It was accepted to utilize that to reduce the multifamily registration fee from $10 to $6.51. Okay? Page 7 is moot. That was accepted. Page 7 is moot. Page 8 is moot. Page 8 is moot. Page 9, that becomes moot because that's incorporated now in the earlier amendment. So page 9 is out. Page 10 was discussed, but we're going to have to go back through it again. What? I understand where we got to go. So page 10 is still on the table. We'll come back to that.
And Mayor, can we, when we get page 10, can we move page 10 up?
How about number 2? Then on page 11, that had to do with the whole issue associated with sustainable development, staffing, and that sort of thing. There have been subsequent conversations on that. I think I'll turn to Mr. Nowinski in a moment on that. In fact, why don't we deal with it right now, Mr. Nowinski?
Well, I hate to move ahead of Mr. Caraway, but...
this isn't part of the going back. This is
I'm just kidding there. Okay, subsequent to a lot of conversations that were going on, Ms. Margolin and I had a conversation yesterday afternoon with the people from TREC and the others that were involved in this, and what they have agreed to do, which is basically what we outlined on Monday, is that the $2,158,845 will stay in the budget as is. We'll convene a committee. We'll work through it. I was pushing for 30 days. They were okay with 60. We may go 90. But as soon as we can get through that process, and no fees will be instituted or changed during that time period until those fees come back to the council and are voted on.
The work should be done by January 1st.
Yeah. Okay. No later than.
Okay. First, Mr. Atkins, please.
Ron, are you saying the source of funds, $2,158,000, would stay on the budget now, and you are saying that the fees will, that day, if they change the fees or what?
No, the fees will not, any change in fees will not go into effect until the council votes on it.
Okay, but my question right now, if we start now and we do not have a fee for the next 30 days or 60 or 90 days, are we going to make sure we raise the fees to take care of the 30 days and 60 and 90 days?
I guess I'm not
sure. Are we going to raise the fees?
We will raise the fees, yes.
So, but I think what I talked about yesterday was on Monday that if we, in 90 days, we're going to look at it, and we do not have any fees applied in that first 90 days, staff, they were losing the staff. They were not losing the staff.
Well, this does, this prevents us from having to.
But also, we're going to have to increase the fees. Because they still have to pay back for the fees going to be.
Okay.
You still have to pay back the fees.
But
you brought it up.
I brought it up because city manager is okay with it. They're okay with it. And so I'm just reporting.
Whatever the package that comes back prior to January 1st,
it's not going to have to be voted on January 1st.
It's going to have to be a package that financially is signed off on by the city manager. So it has processes, all those elements, and some game plan that makes the budget for the entire year 2010-2011 whole. So that's going to be part of what's going to be presented to us no later than January 1st.
I have a question.
Therefore, will we increase staff, or will the staff stay the same?
We're going to try to address some of the service issues around it. May not add all the staff, but we are going to add some staff in the meantime not cut the staff that we've got.
I think there's two things. One, hold on to the staff that we've got and hold them there.
Right.
Then once we understand, here's the process change, here's any things that we're going to do, et cetera, that sort of thing, you're going to have a package and come back to council. Now that changes in process.
Okay.
You're going to have changes in staff.
Okay.
You'll have
I understand that, Mara. My question goes back that we have business out there right now who want to do express permit. I got business out there right now who want to do business city Dallas. And right now we do not have enough staff to make sure to go forward. So I'm trying to make sure that we have enough staff to do that. And I had a long conversation with AC and Mary and Teresa Zone, and I'm trying to get a comfort level that with express permit and all that, when we do this, do we have enough staff to go forward to make sure we got good customer service?
We're not going to cut the staff that's there now if you do this. We're going to probably add some more staff. It'll all have to be paid for.
But the fee change, we need to add the staff. When would the staff be added?
Sometime during the first quarter. I probably won't add all the staff, but we will add some.
And that's why I would like to know when staff is going to be added, because that's going to affect business in my district right now who want to apply for a fresh permit. I don't want to be the same status quo as it is right today.
We're going to add some staff first quarter.
I have a question. I see here that we are saying a source of funding to eliminate the proposed building permit fees increase.
Now, I think that we need to go back and look at some fee increase. In my historical district, Mayor, I need to get with you because, I have three historical districts. And I have some problems on page 15.
Yeah, that's going to be the process that goes on for the next couple of months, looking at all of that.
Okay. I'm going to give you the name of the individual that I would like, and she's a resident, citizen, Denise. I want to be on that committee because I've given my page number that I have some concerns with. The other thing is the nonprofit housing shuttles. They pay a lot of money now into the building permit. And if the fees go up any higher, then they're going to pay a lot more into the building permit on the fee side. So they do pay a lot of money.
That'll have to be part of the discussion. So
it's all going to be part of the package that happens. It'll have to come back with proposals and black.
Now, the question then I want to ask, do you have anybody from the Choto field?
Well, we haven't put that group together yet, but we will.
As we said on Monday, if you want to suggest to your groups or individuals, absolutely. This is intended to be very inclusive. Again, that conversation with Monday, the conversation with today. If you've got names, we're happy to put it together. We haven't put the groups together yet.
Okay.
I think it's been accepted. As you've outlined it. If you will, then, please.
And what's not specified is this is going to a council committee for discussion? Is this the professional staff that's having a discussion? Is this a combination of council members and professional staff? What's the framework here?
We did not talk about council members. I don't think that if a council member is really interested, there's any reason that they can't participate.
Okay.
But it was generally thought of to be the staff people who are close enough, who literally can, and I think, again...
So it would be Teresa and AC's area, the manager's office.
The way you do this, it is incredibly detailed. I've already talked to Teresa.
And I'm okay. Teresa and AC's area.
Yeah. Okay. Wall, you'll do it. People that have been involved in the industry that live with this on a daily basis, because it's incredibly detailed. You'll go through each step in the process. You'll ask, how does somebody else do it? What other options are doing it? And then you'll kind of have on the opposite wall kind of what you're recommending as changes. That thing will wrap up. That will drive what the costs are. That will drive what the fees are. That will drive what the staffing is, et cetera.
It's going to be a staff generator.
It would largely be thought of as staff people who are involved in that and industry people who live with this on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Page 12. Page 12 was the $225,000 on sanitation. That was the one that Mr. Salazar proposed. That was being held. And, in fact, the next page 13 and 14 are also ones that were being held. And then 15 is a new one that was not considered. So. So 13 is out. 13 is out. Will not be considered. But we will come back and consider pages 12 and 14. So with that, then, if you would, now we'll open up into a discussion. And the first discussion will be on item... No, 15 is the new one, and it's open for consideration.
It's 14 out. Page 14.
Page 14 is still there. That will be discussed. Only page 13 went out. Okay, if you would, the first one that we'll deal with is page 5, and that, in effect, as we talked about, was the amendment to the amendment. Ms. Hasso, would you like to talk for just a moment on that one?
Yes, my amendment basically was taking $23,000 of the remainder of the $63,000 after the Veterans Day Parade and applying it to Dallas Area Interfaith Quest Program. And the rest of the money would go to library material.
Do you want to take just a paragraph and update everybody on what the Quest program is?
Yes. Quest program is a training program that is administered through Dallas Area Interfaith. It is certainly not all of the money they need, but this is money is going to leverage their ability to ask for more grants through the WorkSource program. They do train the unemployed, the disabled, those that are mildly ill but can still work. They're very much a part of the area interfaith network, and they get their clients through the churches.
Any questions from Ms. Hossa? Ms. Cooper.
It was submitted today on page 15. It's a little bit complicated. Uses the same sources of funds, so then I'm not sure how we're going to do that. So
that's where I'm
put them up on the whiteboard and sort of let us look at all of them and that kind of thing, so we don't see every source of funds that are kind of related and kind of are pointed to an area. Maybe that would be helpful.
You're exactly where I was going to go. You got it exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Could somebody...
So number five is 63,000.
It's the 63,000. If you
were
kind of on the left side, if you would put sources, and those are the sources, if you put the 60. Sources, if you put two things, if you would put the council office at 63,665, then if you would put right underneath that garage sale permit, 100K. And it may be easier to go over to the right with the uses. And under the uses, if you put Veterans Day Parade 20K, if you would put 20K, yeah. If you would put Quest Program, at 23,665, and we can play with that a little bit. Then if you would next put Arboretum, no, it's on the right hand side. It's on the right hand side.
Sorry,
I didn't see it. And on that, if you put 123,994. Yeah, just get that. Then. Then if you go over and do a total of 100,63,665, and then if you just put 166,000, I'm going to do some rounding here, 166,000. Somebody will give you the right numbers. It's 166,167,000. Okay. So what you have then is you've got several decisions. One is on the sources. Are people comfortable with both of the council, travel, and the garage being sources? Let's deal with just the sources. Then that's perfect. That's what we need to know. Ms. Coopley.
The garage sales permit from $5 to $15, which is $100,000, and it's for cultural arts. So
I apologize. You're right. That should have
so
gone up.
So let's make sure we get all of the sources. And
nope,
all
you're
of
absolutely right. I just missed it. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Put another one. So you'll have 266 now. But put the FIR program under Arboretum. And so that will be 100 grand. And then put 267,000. That's close enough for today's discussion. 267,000 as a subtotal. And somebody's going to come up with a more exact number. So I guarantee you we'll be off by more than 1,000. So. Ms. Coop?
The question I asked on Monday as a manager was increasing the garage sale permit from $5 to $15, does that allow you to have full cost recovery? And if the full cost recovery of the program is only $5, that's fine. But if the full cost recovery of the program is $10, then you've got to cover that $10 somewhere in your budget because you're not covering it here. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Oh.
I can start.
Who's the manager?
Okay, here's the first thing. The $5 is not full cost recovery.
Okay.
That's a contribution towards full cost recovery.
Do we know what full cost recovery is?
I did have that number, and I don't know, but it's you're not quite at it with this. So.
You're not quite at it with, okay. So my point of this is that you're not quite at full cost recovery, but you're charging them a fee to not for the full cost recovery, but for other programs. Just to let everybody know, I thought we were all going to do full cost recovery for fees. But,
okay,
know.
But if I was having this discussion with Mrs. Tinsky the other day, any item that we as a policy decide not to do full cost recovery on, the differential is made up in the general fund budget.
I understand that. I understand that.
So that's already in there. So if you now get closer to cost recovery, you free up that money to do something else with.
Okay. So again, let's focus on the sources we're going to use. We've got to find out what we've got to work with to begin with. The council office, everybody's comfortable with that. We've got already signed off on that. Okay, fair enough.
What are we talking about there? Are we talking about when you say 63,665, how did we come up with that number? Because
that leaves each council person, office, and travel count at the same level that it was this year.
Because last year, didn't several of us give money? I gave $5,000 to my office account to the Cedar Ridge Preserve. You gave money from your account. So how does that factor into it? I didn't say travel. Travel is the $4,000, I think. Yeah.
Okay. The office and travel account that we had, not for the current year, but for the previous year, before we took whatever cuts we all volunteered to take, that higher number is what was put back into the manager's recommendation. This $64,000 brings it back to the current year.
Which is what number, Madam Manager? Which is what number specifically?
Let's get a number.
Which is what number?
Well, we're still in 09-10. So right. So this is taking it back out again.
So what number is it? I know that number. So what is it by office? So why can't the manager say what the specific number is? Because the number is different for the mayor's office and the mayor pro tem and the deputy mayor pro tem. Okay, good. So it is a different number, Mr. Sherwin. Absolutely. We need to wait till we find out that number.
Okay. Then the Veterans Parade is not accounted for.
Well, I wouldn't give up on an answer.
I don't know.
Let's go for the conversation then on the garage sale.
I'm not in favor of the fee and that sort of thing. My constituents have clearly communicated that they think it's ridiculous for the city to charge for garage sale. Yes, there are abuses in the garage sale issues, but that's part of code compliances. day-to-day responsibility week to week, but to put a fee on it, I've had a clear message they do not like it. So I will not support anything.
What we are simply talking about is not an amendment, but it is one that's come out now, and it's a garage sale. We're talking about, do you favor or not favor a fee increase on the garage sale from 5 to 15, which would generate $100,000. That's the only question I'm taking. Ms. Hossel, please.
Yes, and my constituents have said that the abuse is causing the beautification of our district to go down. And so my constituents support it. And I've heard probably half and half in my area. And simply put, this fee gives the ordinance more strength. And that was where I was coming from on this fee, that we currently have an ordinance that you can only have 2 garage sales per year. And with the fee, that gives that ordinance that's already on the books strength. So, Dave, I know we're right next door, but I heard totally different.
And Mayor, if I could, you know, when you look at the signs that you put out all over the city, they put them out to go and make their money, and then they still leave the trashy signs out there for code enforcement and everybody to come back and have to pick up. So it is something that we have to take note of, because they don't just put out one. And this is not for everybody. This is not for everyone. But then when you look at the fact that there are people that have multiple garage sales, and in my neighborhood and in my district and my people, they're simply tired of people abusing it. They're folks that have garage sales, and they will leave stuff hanging outside the whole week waiting on the next Saturday for them to just open up and not have to bring all that stuff back out. And we have with our code and sanitation department, they will put out 15, 20 signs, and they'll leave them out there. And who's picking them up? Our people. So they're still picking them up at our expense.
Thanks, Mayor. My problem with the fee is we've got a fee now, and we're still not enforcing that law. How is increasing a fee going to help us to enforce that law? And that's my concern there. If we can't enforce it now, I don't see how increasing the fee is going to help us to enforce it anymore. And there's people out there that do go by the law, do the right things. So my main concern is it's not going to help us to enforce that law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions. One, I don't believe we have a fee now. I think it's just absorbed into code. Is that correct? Okay. My problems with it are is that I'm just not comfortable with the idea. If we were to impose a fee, I would rather it cover the cost of it rather than collect the money and then free up other money in the budget to go do something else with. That is something that, at least historically, we have not done. We have tried to keep fees masked up to expenses. So, and the other is, I'm not sure how much money we're talking about. Is it $5, $15,
$15? $15
is
$15.
Okay. Okay. Last question that I'll ask for. Have we looked at what it's going to cost us in staff to issue these fees and what the mechanics of it are? I mean, are people going to have to go down to Osmond on Jefferson to get themselves a permit, or are they going to do it online, or can we just kind of jump the gun and we don't know what we're going to do? Oh, we got it all mapped out. Okay,
we
got it all mapped out.
We haven't jumped the gun. The expenses that we currently incur are $359,000 to address garage sales, $359,000.
To address garage sales.
Right. That's our, Ms. Susan talks about the fact that we're spending funds now. We just don't charge a fee. This would be to recover that cost for garage sales. That's our current expense, that we don't recover any fee to address that.
How many of those things do we do?
Well, I don't have those numbers here, but with a significant number of yard sales that we address where they're in violation, and the city sends the code officer to go and cite the person as well as remove the sign.
A significant number. Okay. So at $15 a piece, it means we're going to go out and do $24,000.
That's the mayor, yes.
That's a significant number.
Okay.
And you've thought about a process to issue permits?
Yes.
What's that process, very briefly, going to be?
The process would be incorporated in code in the group where we do the registration for single family. We have a number of folks that do permitting activity within code, so we'll incorporate it in that group.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to find out is how much of a burden are we putting on the citizens? How much does also think that the garage sales in many cases have turned into a blight on neighborhoods and they turn into a code problem? But at the same time, if we create a process that's so burdensome, what you're going to have is nobody's going to go get a permit because the permit process, that's why I asked you jokingly somewhat, are they going to have to drive down to Hockmock to get a
permit
on Jefferson and Oak Cliff?
No, we don't envision someone having to drive to Oak Cliff
to get
a permit.
One?
Well, we want to use automation to get that done first step, as much as we can.
Okay. All right.
I don't have the program designed right here as it stands.
I just think we're a little bit ahead of ourselves. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
My comments were the same as I made a little while ago. I can see imposing the $15 fee, but only if we go directly to the service. And I do recognize, Mr. Caraway, it is a huge problem in many areas of the southern sector. So I think it's something that needs to be addressed, but I just don't feel comfortable using it for other, taking that money and using it for other things rather than the kind of the getting to the real issue at hand.
Which I think for what we're doing would be a no vote.
That would be a no vote.
Yeah. Ms. Margolin, and then, again, we're really talking about one small piece here. At some point, we've just got to decide ups or downs and go forward on it. Margolin.
I'll be brief. My feeling at this point is that if, as is likely, there's going to be a significant increase in property taxes, I'm just opposed to instituting this fee at all. I mean, I just can't see how we can, on the one hand, ask more money from people, significantly more money, and then on the other hand, nickel and dime them. I'm just not in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hoffman, then we'll just go ahead and have
a quick vote. Yeah, may I move to approve this item?
Okay. How many are in favor of the $100,000 garage sale, which at the core is a permit fee of $15? If you're in favor, raise your hand. That's simple. 3, 4, 5, 6, if I'm counting wrong, somebody say something. 7, 8. That passes. Okay, now, we're going to go over to you. So, and we have actually found $800 extra because the council office one, after further putting the numbers, is now $64,405. Yeah, 64.
These are the sheets you have are the amounts that you agreed to cut last year on your office count and on your travel count. They total up to $64,465. So what we've done, we put this back in for the coming year, and if y'all don't want it in, we'll take it back out. You're done without it this year.
I have a question.
The manager did a calculation wrong.
On the if everyone's funds went down, Mayor, is there an error because yours just stayed the same?
I am so glad you asked that. And the reason why is I cut staff by over 20%. So the total savings was like $40,000 or $50,000.
Okay.
Nobody else cut staff, but I cut staff, which generated about
$50,000. But we're just talking about the budget here. I mean, you have a bigger staff than anybody else.
Yeah, no, but there was no staff that was cut last year. It was on the table. It wasn't. I went ahead and cut it by over 20%.
Okay, I understand, but it still stays the same that the budget, which is allotted to each council person, exclusive of staff, is what we're talking about here. And the staff is another deal.
This is not staff.
Right, okay.
But to get to yours, why there wasn't a variance on mine was what this doesn't show is the staff. There
right.
No staff cut by anybody else, but we cut it. Over 20, it was a very large number.
Right, but again, I just wanted a clarification because everyone's went down and just that number stayed up. And you clarified that you make cuts in staff as opposed to the budget. I got it.
Substantially beyond what we did. Okay, so now we are over on the right hand side.
Question.
Right. To go to Steve's point and the mayor's point, there were a lot of us that gave up because we have positions where we have to travel, okay, with National League of Cities, RGC, so on and so forth. We gave up money in our budget over and beyond other people in our budget and not necessarily out of the travel portion of it. Now, council members, I'm sure you all realize that you can use any portion of your budget you want to for travel. I mean, that's really the, really and truly, you can. So the issue really for me is, I agree with Ms. Margolin, we should go back to the, to whatever number it is that we were all trying to reach last year, but let us decide within our own budgets where we want that. Let's all have the same resources, and I agree on cutting it, but let's all allow within our different orgs they're not called orgs, they're called accounts. Thank you, accounts, right. Let us all within our own accounts decide which ones we want, because I think that's really the fair way to do it. Because some of us did, because of our positions, really had to, it won't make much difference, because if we're all the same, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It is all the same. It is all the same. Mr. Newman?
No, I'm sorry, I don't understand, Mayor. No.
This last column is what we gave up.
No, I'm talking about the total of 10 11 election. Those are all the same, with the exception of the mayor pro tem, and the deputy mayor pro tem. It's not
so
much.
So what's the last column there? So why are they all different numbers?
All decided as
one
for
the
election.
That's
what I decided. I decided
I was going
to have one. And to Ms. Coop's point, if you'll just tell me where you want to take it from this year, we'll do that again.
Right.
All the parts mean that if anybody wants to give up $1,000 or $2,005, we do it. If we don't, we don't. Is that what's on the floor?
No. It's a very small.
And you've got, for instance, on Mr. Kinski, you gave up 6120, and you gave up nothing else. So if you wanted to give up your 6120 total from travel and your account, you could do
that.
I understand that.
Yeah.
I think that's all Ms. Cooper's saying.
Okay. So Ms. Margolin's motion is to leave things the way they were last year, or this year.
Now,
the
numbers you live with, the one in the middle column, 9090.
Right.
So in that case,
Well, so like the beach people, but just so high.
They didn't give up anything. Go over here to the town.
Well, how fair is that?
Yeah, it's not very fair.
What's all the time?
Huh?
Okay, I have two questions. First of all, Mary, what is the unit 1977?
Pardon?
The travel unit 1977, $15,000.
Oh, it's the legislative travel. That's the one that you have to be going to Washington or Austin.
Okay, so any travel by council members to Washington or Austin?
To lobby.
Get charged out of unit 1977.
Yes.
So are we reducing that one as well?
You certainly can. Y'all decide.
I'm just saying if we're looking at council expenses and travel, we need to look at all sorts of things. That's one observation. I didn't know what unit 1977 was. Okay. Next question. I would agree with where Ms. Koof was headed. If there should be equality across council member offices as far as travel and office budgets. Because when you look at the 9-10, Mayor, you said for us to look at the 9-10 budget column. For some to be 16-4 and others to be 11-4 and the others to be 21-1 and 12-4, that's very inconsistent.
But
there should be consistency across that.
Well, that was y'all's decision last year when you were struggling with reducing your budget, and y'all came along separately and said, I'll give up this, I'll give up this.
Some people gave up more than others. That's the short answer.
I hear you.
That's the point to hear.
Okay, well, I'm just communicating. No, I think it should be consistent.
And then by that, and that's a fair thing, then you'd have two options on the table. If you want to do the 64, I'll get to you in just a second. If you do the 64-465, you have two options. One, you can adopt the variance column. The second thing you could do is do a pro rata reduction, which would basically take the 64-265. That would be the numerator. Divide it by the 268 plus the 75. So in round numbers, 268, 75, 25. $345, and that would give you a percentage, and you can apply that percentage. So everybody gets the same one, same percentage, but everybody would get the same amount, and it becomes proportional.
First of all, looking at my district right now, if I took, I see here that District 12 took out $6,000, and that was a staff person, I guess. Was that a staff person? Now, I only have $14,000, and it, if I take out six, it would leave me, I guess, with 10. My mailer for my whole district was $10,000. For Mellon. So that would leave me with $0. I understand. I know. You don't subtract any more. Okay. I understand. So if I have 14 right now, 7-6, that money's already. My, that's what I will have. My, okay, I understand now. My mailer, just to mail out, is around $8,000. That's just for stamp only. Then that leaves me with a few dollars. Then I have to have office supplies that leaves me with a few dollars. Then if we take out travel and we pay for our national leader city, then but they're talking about taking out travel. Are we going to keep traveling?
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, well,
I'm
fine.
Oh, jump in, everybody else. Thanks. Okay, let me. Yeah, I have just a couple of housekeeping questions. In 08-09, the mayor pro tem and the deputy mayor pro tem obviously have more in their budgets because they of their ceremonial duties. That's correct. Fair enough. No, I'm just trying to understand it. It Salazar's for some reason or another was less in 08-09 and Atkins was more. So everybody should have had 16-4, but can you explain to me why Salazar's was less and Atkins was more? Okay, so let me just start at that point. Everybody should have 16-4 except for the officers. Okay? In years 8 and 9. So just tell me why that is. Because what you could do, council member, is you could just say, okay, everybody has 16-4.
I think it's actually a pretty simple answer. I think what you have is Salazar gave money to Atkins to the exact same number.
Oh, okay.
That reflects what's going on in the year.
Okay. Well, right. Would it be an idea? Because I understand, really, what Ms. Davis is trying to say is, I can email my folks, you know, and it's left. And she and the truth of the matter is when you send out one of those mails, it's very, very expensive, and I understand that. So maybe, I mean, it's not a matter of, I don't think it's a matter of just saying, you know, you should cut as much as another person should cut, because I understand there's an issue there. So I guess my only solution would be, and I know this wasn't Ms. Margolin's idea, but maybe you would just take a small percentage off of the 16-4, and that way everybody feels it's the same, or try somehow or another to do it that way. I don't know if that's a fair way or not. You needed last year, you needed 14,760. Did you have enough 14,760 to get you? You didn't have enough. If it was 10%, that would still give you a little bit more. I don't know. You know, maybe we should just vote it up or down. But I'm just trying to make it so that it turned out.
What you're trying to do in this case is it's actually a simple calculation. Just take the 64,000, divide it by 14. Okay? So in rough numbers, bear with them, it's $4,000. That means that you would take $4,000 off each of the numbers in the proposed fiscal year, 10-11, and everybody is treated equally if you do that.
Okay. I understand. Okay. But what they're saying is they can't get the bailing back, is the issue. Right. Okay. Well, I'm perfectly happy to leave mine the way that it is right now. I'm perfectly happy to do that, you know, to offset someone else's cost. But, you know, that's, I understand
Fair.
What you're saying. It's an issue.
I think last year all of us came together and we figured out with our very diverse districts, our diverse needs, how we could.
My mic is on. Can you guys turn our mics up a little bit? Because all the mics are a little bit low. Last year we all came together. We recognized that each of our districts have very diverse needs. And we all reached into our various budgets and we cut. And as someone who cut among the most, I'll tell you, I am comfortable with different people cutting different amounts. I'm going to continue to cut what I cut last year. But I understand that other districts can't just use email to get to their constituents, and it costs money to do printing, it costs money to do mailers. And so I'm very comfortable with each of us doing exactly what we did last year and making sure that we're all able to equally address our constituents in the means that they are best able to obtain communications from us. So my feeling is let's stick with what we did last year, each of us addressing our various council districts in the mayor's office as we did in the current year. I would simply take exactly what we did last year, Dave, cut and paste it into this year. That's exactly what I would do. And if folks have different issues, I gave up all of my travel funds. I said I will do zero travel funds last year. I'll do that again this year. If I need to travel, I'll do it from my campaign account. So I'm going to continue to do that. And cut in my council office as well as I did last year. But we each have different needs. I'm sending out mailers from campaign funds as well. So we all have different abilities to do different things with our funds, and we got to address it in a diverse way. We can't just use a cookie cutter way. It's not going to work for all of us.
It was Ms. Koop, I think, and then Ms. Atkins, and then.
If we do that, Angela, then it's the $64,000 question. It's the $64,000 saving, so which was what originally Ms. Margolin said. I'm comfortable with that. Mine was there were three of us that took severe cuts last year. I was proud of the fact that I could come in, under and be helpful to the budget, and I'll just be proud of that fact this year too, and realizing that. There are differences and certainly differences in the district. So.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll give Linda, I'm glad you made a statement. If I would let anyone travel my district, and I thought I got one of the biggest, largest districts here besides Dave Newman, but I got, people who still not doing email, which I still got mail out, and you still got to drive. I have many town hall meetings. Matter of fact, I even had many town hall meetings, 10 this year, first year, just trying to get to the people. And with mail out, I probably just do one mail out. But I also do mail out with my own campaign funds just to get to the people. But I cannot change my budget this year, but now we're getting to the database that we are getting people to do emails and fax machine in that dollar, but it might be another year, another 2 years that we might be to the point that we can save. I know Ron and Lynn, I know your email, you got probably a big email base like Jerry. He probably got one of the biggest email base here because his district is not so spread out as mine. But everybody got a different needs, and that's why every district is different, And this budget had to stay the same I did last year. I just want to tell you my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Even last year, and as in my district, I gave up $1,000 out of travel. So it only left me with $3,000. And some did not even, give. They decided not to give or take any money out of their travel. So I just think we need to leave it as is, or we others who didn't take money out of their travel take $1,000 out of their travel.
All right. Anyone else? Ms. Montgomery?
My original intention of bringing this forward was really to try to find $20,000 for the veterans. So that's what prompted all of this. I'm comfortable with everyone doing what's appropriate for them. I'm comfortable staying with what I've got in the current 9-10 budget. It doesn't have to be the same for everybody. I was just trying to find a way for us to fund the veterans and show that we are participating in working toward helping the city. However we each can do that, we each can do that. I'd really like to find the $20,000 for the veterans.
Well,
other than that, we need to do what we need to do.
And I think we're going to find the $20,000 for the veterans. I think we have it. I think it just needs to be identified as where we already have it. Are you saying that it's from here? Okay. All right. So you can have Ms. Davis and Ms. Coop.
Even if on travel, even if we took, each one of us took $1,000, okay, so Buster's not giving up any travel, but I'm just saying, if we were to, that's $15,000. But
then Ms. McKenzie, and then we'll be ready to move. Thank you. Yeah, well, honey, come right back.
All right, I tell you what, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give up, leave my office budget where it was last year.
You've got lots of ears listening.
Okay. I'm going to give my money up, and I'm going to earmark it for the Veterans Day Parade and take at least $6,120 of that issue off the table.
Okay.
Okay. You ready to that? All
right.
So got it?
It looks like it.
So that means that this is now muted, going to stay as it is. That's the consensus of where we're at.
Right.
So stay, our budget is going to stay and remain intact. All right.
What I heard Mr. Natinsky say was the proposed FY10 budget will stay as it is in this column, except he, Ms. Coop, and Ms. Margolin will put in money for the Veterans Day Parade out of that, right?
All right, Jerry.
Okay, so there's four of you. Tell me what amount you want to take, and then I'll...
All of my 61 money, and all of Ms. Coop, and all of Ms. Graham, okay. And all of Ms. Coop.
Okay. Right, but the point is the rest of the money is staying in your budget for the rest of the year. Tell me what you want to do with the other $47,000.
All right.
Mr. Mayor, the variance that we're all giving up, not just a few, is $64,465.
Okay.
$20,000 of that will go to the Veterans Day Parade. $23,665 will go to the Dallas Area Interfaith Quest Program. And the rest can go to library materials.
All right. Do y'all understand?
It is all the same money.
No, hold on.
All right, let's go back over it and make sure that everybody's got to understand.
Hold on. The Veterans Day Parade number is 23,106.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that's fine, Ms. Marcola. You got 23 for the bedroom. So that fills Ms. Marcola.
23,160.
All right. So that's a firm number. Okay.
And you've got 41,185 left out of that 64.
And now, Ms. Hossel. All right, that's on the board.
Next minute, 6.
Okay.
Now you've got 17,520 left.
Now you're saying the 17,000, you're saying put it to the library material.
Okay.
That's
what they laid out.
Can we vote?
You haven't voted. So.
Okay. Okay.
17,520 on the library materials, and everybody decide what they want.
No, 17.
520. Yeah.
Now we're saying we want to take these individually. What's the suggestion, Ms. Salazar? Okay. All right. Who's opposed to taking it all? Bounce it out.
No, you have not. On the uses side, you have more money than you have for the sources. Just because they got shortchanged.
Okay, now, let's take our time. Mary, explain what you just said about the...
Okay, y'all need to put me a total on the uses side, please. You have more ways to spend money than you've got money to spend, so...
Yeah, okay.
Gene, could y'all please total that so I can see what the total of the usages is?
Now, Mary, we are not considering the Arboretum and the Cultural Arts in this motion.
Well,
we
you
are
need to
considering spending the $64,000.
Well, but what they said was what everybody said was to do it individually. So I'm just totaling it so we can see.
$164,000.
Okay. Well, if you just want to vote on the council,
yeah.
On the council money, vote on the council money, vote on that use, and it's done.
Right.
Well, y'all just have.
So
that's
just,
my point is y'all got too many uses and not enough sources.
Yeah, well, let's take our time to do this. Let's vote on the council office, the $64,000 that we've just agreed upon, and let's define where the $64,000 is going to go.
Okay.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
All right. Now, where should the council $64,000 go?
Everybody want to give up?
Okay. I'm still confused on that. So we looked at 08-09 column, 09-10 column, and 10-11 column. And then there was discussion that individually each person should decide how they direct theirs or not. Last year I put $5,000 to the Cedar Ridge Preserve. I hadn't made up my mind about whether I was going to do that this year or not. So I still don't understand what's on the table.
What I heard on the table was that y'all would live with the 9-10 budget, that column there,
mm-hmm.
and that you would take 64 in the variance column, that it would go to those things you've got listed up there.
The variance column, Mary, is 54.
No, the variance column is 2.
Oh, 54 plus 10.
Yeah. And you take that 64 and you would spend it on those 3 or 4 items that we mentioned.
Oh.
Y'all, Jack, y'all need to get out from the board. Thank
so
you.
Now let's vote on that first. Is everyone in favor of that? Well, then let's take. Not on the uses, on agreeing that. We're going to take and agree to the 64-65. That's the first. We are agreeing that this is something that we're going to adopt to say we're going to all give up that amount of money.
Mr. Chairman, what we're agreeing is that the 10-11 council office budget will be the same as the 9-10 council office budget.
Okay. All right. That's the first vote. Let's take that vote.
Let me ask you.
Okay.
Myself, Ms. Coop, Ms. Margolin, and Mr. Allen have agreed to that with the money that we're going to give up directed to go to the Veterans Decorations.
That's
is one of those
first
items.
Vote. The first vote is we want the 10-11 council office budget to be the same as the 9-10 council office budget.
Is
that the first vote?
Is that fine? Hold on, Mr. Okay. All right. So let's take that as a motion and let's do our little straw poll. Who wants to keep those budgets the same this year as they were last year? All in favor of this seat. All right. Okay. So that will remain. Thank you, Ms. Hill. Now next. Yeah. Now next we go to what do we do?
So wait a minute. What was the vote, Mr. Mayor? Okay. What was the term of the vote here on that? What was the
all right, let's do a straw vote. One was opposed. Chevy, how are you voting? All right, just show me the nays.
The nays.
All right, that's the vote.
One nay.
All right, so what we've just said, we're going to leave this year's. Chevy.
You voted on again,
Jeff.
So 60,
okay.
Everybody's giving up $64,000.
That's right. Totally. We've clarified that. Now, the next move should be.
Where do you want to spend that?
All right. Now, where do we want to spend the $64,000? Ms. Coop. Let's go, Ms. Coop.
I make a motion that the four of us give up
$23,100.
No,
don't like that.
No.
Take it out.
Take it out of
64.
Right.
The
better take away,
the whatever else
I'm saying,
whatever.
All right, wait a minute. Hold. Let me have order. Let me add the order first. Ms. Coop, go back to your motion, Ms. Coop. Then let's get some rebuttal over here with Ms. Hunt and Ms. Margolin. Okay.
That's the motion.
All right.
Out
of the $64,000, $20,000 will go to the Veterans Day Parade. That's correct. All right, let's take that vote for the Veterans Day out of the $64,000, $20,000 coming out. Show of hands. Any in opposition? Okay, so now, that leaves $44,665. You know, put that somewhere we can see it.
Just leave yours where it is. You can do it over here.
Okay.
Right. $64,000.
Now we need to spend $44,000. Any suggestions? Ms. Hossel. Okay.
Quest is a training program that is under the auspices of Dallas Area Interfaith. Job train the unemployable, the disabled, and those people who don't have jobs. They will use this money to leverage more money through the federal government to continue this training program for, and they administer it.
All right. Is that a motion? And it is. All right. Let's get a vote on that expenditure. Sure. One question, Ms. Allen.
Refresh my memory. How many people are affected? How many participants?
They said somewhere around 10,000 people. I don't really remember. It was a big amount. Do you remember?
It's like 100, 150 people, I think. So yeah, and it's. I'm okay. But I was trying to.
All right, let's take the vote on the $23,000. Ms. Margolin.
I'll vote for it. My hesitation, quite frankly, is I hate to start another program that then year after year grows and grows and grows. I would really like to see them apply for CDBG money and try to fund them that way and
absolutely.
Not fund them this way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going forward, we've got to direct them to the right places.
See, that's what happens.
Okay. All right. All in favor of this moving this $23,000 to the
to the Quest program. $20,800. All right. Let's take this vote without Ms. Hunt. I just said let's take this vote without Ms. Hunt. Let's take this vote. Ms. Hunt,
thank you, Ms.
please Hunt. Speak.
I think Ms. Margolin's point is well taken, and I think Ms. Kibbs' point is well taken. What I would suggest is a friendly amendment that if we do this, that this is 1 year only, and that next year funds either come from CDBG funds or they don't come at all.
So amendment to that, Ms.
Hossel?
Okay. Ms. Amendment.
Respectfully, one council can't bind the next.
All right.
So even if we put that in the amendment here, we can't bind the next council's budget. No matter what Ms. Hossel says today, no matter what the amendment that we place today, they're a very good organization. I've met with them many, many times over 3 years. I cannot support that today because of the fear that we're creating another entitlement program that will grow and grow later on. And I'd rather put the money to library materials because it's more people. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
All right. Now, no more questions. We're going to take this vote. All in favor of moving this $23,000, let me see a show of hands. Opposed? Let's see, both. Three. All right, motion passed. So now we're down to $20,800. Mr. Cabane.
Yes. Please, let's put that fund with the $100,000 to the Arboretum.
We only have 20. We only have
20.
Now.
But where are you going to go? I mean,
get your 20 done.
Can I get my 12? That's what I'm doing.
Okay,
let's get the 20 to the Arboretum. Let me tell you, this is a Dallas situation. This Arboretum, we have not given them funds in the last 3 years that they've needed. They're fixing to build a brand new children's center there that's going to be world renowned. It's already a world-renowned center, and we need to help them with their electricity and their power. They're needy, and because they've done what they've done, we sit and look at them like, oh, well, they don't need anymore. They do, and this is one of our jewels in this city that helps us all. It's for all of us. It's in my district, yes, but it's everybody. I'd like to make a motion that we put that fund in the Arboretum.
The $20,800.
Yes.
All right, specify that.
The $20,800.
In the Arboretum. Okay. All right. I'll move into that question in the discussion. Anywhere. All right, let's take a vote. All in favor of Sheffield's suggestion of moving the $20,800 to the Arboretum, let's show by show of hands. All right, so that's bad. Yes, okay. All right, so we got that part. So now, let's go into the garage fee money, the $100,000 left. Suggestion?
Yeah.
Ms. Hossel?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. One of the cultural arts programs that was taken care of with the lower revenues was the facilities restoration program, and what that does is it gives our smaller arts groups who have gone out and purchased their own buildings some funds to continue to keep those buildings up. So it's restoration of facilities for cultural arts programs that are smaller in number and not in city-owned facilities.
Okay. So what's your suggestion again, Ms. Hossel?
My motion is to give the $100,000 to the cultural arts FER program for them to disseminate to some programs that don't have city-owned facilities.
Is that a motion? Is that a second?
Second.
I just move a second. Ms. Hunt?
I'll tell you, I am torn by this. I understand the need to assist our cultural organizations. At the same time, I know that we, when compared to other cities with regards to library materials and how much we spend on that, are very non-competitive. We are not obtaining library materials as other large cities are and restoring library materials. And so I would tend to say that we should put the money towards that.
Okay. All right, Ms. Sandler.
The reason I would support the cultural FER program is that right now we have developed a very, one of, I guess, the premier cultural arts district in the nation. And the this program encourages local arts groups to continue to develop. And my concern is that unless we develop our local artists, many of these buildings may not in the future be able to sustain the viability unless we're able to bring in the different communities to use these buildings. On the opening season for TITA at the Windspear Performance Hall, the hall was sold out by a mariachi group. Think about that. One mariachi group, 13-member ensemble, with no electrical instruments, sold out the Windspear for that one night. You know, that's a potential. Now, this is probably the world's most famous mariachi group, called Mariachi Varga, and it sold out the Windspear. You know, but we're not saying that we're all going to go out and train mariachis to go try to sell out everything else. What we're saying is that there is a dynamic where we need to support the arts groups to continue to grow. And much like we've had success with local artists, you know, through our high school, this is just another extension for those many, many other students to be able to reach by these cultural groups. And this helps and enhances those opportunities, because not everyone can go out and afford and buy a building. They just can't do it. They'd rather put their money into programming and reaching the kids than to go out and buy any buildings. But this helps them to rent. Is that correct, Ms. Hoffman? Okay. Thank you.
I think, Ms. Salazar, we have a motion. But Mr. Cadane, we're going to go to Mr. Cadane. We've got a motion to say. Did you have something to say?
Yes. And I'm concerned. I'm with the arts 100%. We need that $100,000 for the arboretum, and they need it for their power bill. What they're doing out there at the arboretum is unreal. With the new children's center that they're going up with, they're doing that. That's coming from them. This is a facility that is world renowned. People come all over to see our arboretum. It's going to be a big enhancement for our kids, for our schools, and they need those funds. Like I said before, they haven't gotten them in the future. And they did contract with the city, gave them property, and we were supposed to take care of them. We haven't done it. So, you know, I don't know. We've already given cultural affairs $2,500,000, and we're continuing to move more. I mean, in the one budget amendment that we did, we've taken care of each one of these folks, and we've done nothing for one of the best facilities in the city of Dallas. And I'd like to make an alternate motion, Mr. Mayor, that money funds go to the arboretum. The $100,000 goes to the arboretum. What?
Mr. Mayor.
The garage. No, I've been told. I was trying to put the garage sale money there, and I was told that would go to the garage sale. Fund the. When y'all voted on that, it was said that those funds would go to the garage people, staff. It would stay in the garage sale planning.
No, I don't think that was.
Is that right?
Miss Hunter, I'll tell you something.
Oh, okay.
I am going to withdraw my motion for the FER program.
Okay.
And I will more than be, I will be very happy to support the arboretum.
Thank you so much. Okay. So my motion is on the table. Is $100,000.
Yeah. Oh, hold on.
So when
I would.
Okay. Do we
would.
Did you make
make the motion that those funds go to the arboretum.
All right, Paul, Mr. Dock, could you come up and tell us a little bit about the arboretum and the financial status?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Ms.
Okay. So have we already, pardon me for asking this, have we already voted to increase the garage permit fee to $15?
Yes, ma'am.
We did. That passed.
That passed.
Thank you.
Not unanimously.
Up at the dock.
Do we really need that? We know what the arboretum does.
Well, up at the dock. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about the arboretum and the operation and the electric field and what we're trying to do?
The arboretum has two segments of funding. They have a stipend. They also have, we pay the utility bills. This last year, we reduced their utility bills as a part of their allocation by some $70,000, right? And then this restoration puts back in from $146,000 back up to $218,000, and we're still paying 80% of the utility bill, which means that if you wanted to fully restore them, they would be back at $500,000 in utilities and about $218,000 in stipends, which is a total of about $718,000 a year we're paying. Right now we're restoring the $218,000, which is the stipend. What's not being restored is the 20% reduction in their utilities, which they'd be required to pay next year. So the net difference of what they're receiving, which is, again, about $718,000, would be a reduction next year of about $70,000.
All right, Miss Davis.
I would like the cost of garden center is lacking $25,000, and the garden center is lacking $25,000.
Okay.
And I thought that was taken care of.
Okay.
But is it not taken care of, Paul?
It is. It has been restored.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was supposed to be cut is restored.
Yeah.
What these agencies may be telling you is they were cut last year and the year before.
Paul, I'm sorry. Where was it restored?
There's $100,000 for partners in the amendment.
It's in there. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Let me throw something out here. And to Mr. Cadane, I'm going to be supportive of the operation. We've already voted to give the Arboretum $20,000. I want to take that $20,000. In other words, of this $100,000, let's give them the $80,000 because that's what the goal was to give the Arboretum $100,000. They got $20,800 on the last amendment. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that short of...
Yes, it is.
They need that.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
Hold on a minute. Just hold on. Now, because you asked for $100,000. Now, we can't just give them $120,000 when they own it. Because the other $20,000 at least needs to go to the cultural art.
No.
Well, now, wait a minute. And also, let me just be on record with this. Because I want the press to really get to. Now, this $100,000 that we are giving to the Arboretum from the garage sale is the money that the folks that voted against the garage sale are going to be utilizing for the fabulous Arboretum. And I support that. But I want to make sure that you all know that the Arboretum's money is the money coming from the garage sale that you all voted against, that we're going to make sure that the Arboretum acquires this $100,000. Now, of that, it should be, I would ask, that we leave the $20,800 from the past amendment that we just did, and that we approved that difference. And then we add the difference of the $100,000 that will bring the Arboretum up to $100,000. And you got $100,000 for the Arboretum.
Yeah, but Mayor, that's what they need, over $123,000. They need $127,000.
But the cultural arts needs something.
Mayor, we're giving them $2.5 million.
Well, no, we're talking about...
We're giving them two, what they...
You voted against that too.
What did I do?
You voted against that too.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was right on the wrong deal. Yeah, you're right.
All right.
You're right.
All right. So you are right. Okay. Now here's where we're gonna help.
Hey, now wait a minute.
We're not gonna get this $20,000.
You're way ahead of me already. You're already way ahead of me.
Okay.
On everything else. I'm trying to give something back to the city of Dallas.
If you got $100,000, you got $100,000.
Yeah, but I've got 23 in my
pocket. But, but we're going to give that to the cultural, to the little bitty baby cultural.
You want to see what's in the next suitcase or give us that? I want that too. I want the next bag.
Okay.
All right, now listen, let's make sure we're done. Thank you, Paul. We're done with you.
We are just very lucky we didn't do this morning when those visitors from Iraq were here trying to see about government in action.
All right. So, Mary, do you understand what we are doing? Okay. All right, all in favor?
Can the deal or no deal?
I was trying to get it out there. All right, here's where we're going. We are going to give the difference of the $20,800 of the garage sale permit fee to the Arboretum, in which will bring the Arboretum up to $100,000. And apply the additional funds to the cultural arts that Ms. Hosso was speaking of. All right? Is that fair? Yes, sir. And then back there.
I respectfully cannot support that because I do not believe philosophically we should raise and charge a fee and move the money elsewhere.
Okay.
So I'll be voting against it.
All right.
So the motion on the table was to put the $100,000 with the Arboretum.
That's where you're going. Okay, we'll end up with $100,000 at the Arboretum.
Okay,
but you're doing straw votes now, so
yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, all in favor? Any opposed? Let's see the opposed. Newman, Coop, and Latinsky. Okay, fine, so move. All right, Mayor, where are we next?
Where is it?
And
I think we were on page 5.
Where did we get this one from? Okay. No, we're going to put that in the...
That's part of the motion.
Okay.
All right.
So we're
in
zero now.
All right.
I think
we
got
one.
Okay.
All right. I'm taking
care of
page 10, so I think you
taken
from the
thing.
So, did we decide on 11? I think we already decided 11, too. That's accepted. And then 12.
This is a Mr. Mayor.
All right, Mr. Salazar.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is one that that I consider for the fact that when we look at all of our staff and going into the sanitation, many of these workers are the least paid of the entire city. Many of them have worked for city for many years, but yet they're not treated as full-time employees of the city or contract. And what the intent of this was to do for sanitation was to restore these three of the furlough days by leaving the sanitation rate at the current rate of amount of $20.34 a month. And this would add $225,000, which would restore three of the eight furlough days. And I ask the council to consider it today on a straw poll vote.
Okay. All right. Any questions? Any second?
Which was good?
We have a second on that? It was a necessary need. Okay. Any questions? Ms. Margot?
If you're within the same department, so.
Right. My question is, within the city of Dallas, are there other people paid in the same way and at the same level as these people would?
Yeah. Yes, in parks and water, there are, you know, there's this level job is in other parts of the organization.
It's in other parts of the organization.
Yes.
Then I'll be voting against it. Thank you.
Yeah. Question. Mary, if the council adopted this amendment by Mr. Salazar, are we changing, is this the only group of city employees that would then have only 5 furlough days and would everyone else have 8?
I'm sorry, I can't.
His proposal is to reduce the furlough days for sanitation workers from 8 to 5.
Yes.
So if I understand the scope of his amendment, that means all other city employees are at 8 furlough days. And the sanitation are at 5.
Yes, but you remember last year the sanitation did not have furlough days because we weren't sure we could manage it.
I understand, but you're saying we can manage it.
We can manage it, Mr. Newman, and you may recall that the uniform officers will have 5 furlough days.
Okay, I'm saying civilian. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Civilians, they'll be the only civilians with
okay.
5 days, yes.
And basically, we would use up the savings in the, the 9 cent savings we were going to bank and give back to the user, the citizens that use the rates.
Would remain the same.
Okay. I cannot support this because one of the things that I've communicated to my citizens is recycling's working, it's saving you money, and look, we put 9 cents back in your pocket. So, thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Ms. Margolis? All right. Ms. Margolis?
No, I just
all right. Let's take the vote. All in favor? Opposed? Let's just see the vote. All right. The polls win. All right. Motion denied.
Okay. You have one more that you haven't addressed, and that's page 14. This is just an intent to try to raise the minimum salary from the pay cut, to which the pay cut applies from $30,000 to $40,000. I had the manager listening in this, and we're still looking for a source of funds. So this time we're not going to consider it at this time, just still out there. But until the I'm going to get with the manager to see if we can work out some source of funds to
cover it. Yeah, you can't do it with that because y'all are already kind of.
Right.
Okay.
But the other intent, and I just wanted to put out there as well, is that I understand several concerns about treating some employees different from other employees regarding their furlough days. It is our intent still that whether we look at the furlough day or even the impact on our employees. I am asking the manager to look in the to do a 3-month report back to talk to us about how to ease the impact, whether it's by salary or by retirement, in some way to come back to us in 3 months and talk to us about how we can ease that impact for all city employees, including police and fire. And the issue is that in some of my prior amendments, I did raise issues regarding potential fees that could be raised. And they're going to look at that. And there are some increases in fees that we could utilize to offset some of these cuts or furlough days that we've done. I'm asking the manager to come back in 3 months to brief us on it. Is that correct, Mary?
That'd be good.
Okay. All right. Mr.
Davis. This is to the city manager. Mary, I just wish that we could go back, and I do agree with Steve, where we're giving up. How many furlough days are we doing now?
8 furlough days for civilians, 5 for police and fire.
Okay. Are you in any position willing to give up one for the police and fire, and perhaps one day for?
Don't have any money to do it.
Okay.
And Mr. Salazar's idea is really the best. Is let's in 3 months from now, let's look and see what options there are out there. And we'll have a little better handle on revenues, and I can come back and tell you what's going on. Because in prior years, when we've done some salary cuts mid-year, we've also done some restorations mid-year, too. So you can look at that as we go along through the year.
So, is that it, Ms. Davis? All right. So, Ms. Sun,
you've got.
Let's think we are having a fantastic year. We got a big windfall. Is it possible for city employees for us to, in the middle of the year, come back and make adjustments, or will we have to wait till the next
No, you can certainly make those adjustments. If we got a windfall, it'd be a big windfall. I would come back and tell y'all, here's what we recommend. We might recommend saving until next year. We might recommend working with the employees. We might recommend any number of things. But yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's open for us.
Yes, sir. You can do that.
In January, I mean, we just hit the lottery. And we can come back and... Well, we're still trying to shut down that illegal one y'all got over there on Preston.
But we want to
Okay, let me be real wild off.
Let me go to Ms. Gill.
Thank you, Ms. Gill. I simply want to be on record once again. Ms. Hume, I agree that Mr. Salazar's idea is probably the most workable, but I do want to be clearly on record. If there is any opportunity, and the first opportunity there is, I want to put back at least one furlough day for the uniforms. And then put back one for the civilians. If there's and I understand, I'm not saying we gotta do that now because we don't have any money. But that is what I wanna do as soon as we have a chance.
And that would have to be the equivalent of because we have a contract. So but I hear gotcha.
Thank you.
All right. So Ms. Salazar, we are holding this as is Ms. Manager.
I think we've gone through all of your amendments. We'll send you a copy this Friday about what we've done and where we're fixing up for you to vote for next Wednesday, if that's okay.
All right. Madam Secretary. We're going to see.
I think the mayor had suggested to DFW that they...
We're going to do DFW next week.
Next week,
we'll vote. Next week. We're going to do the briefing, and we'll vote on next week with DFW, okay? That's factual. All right.
I was hoping y'all were through.
just
be really frank. Yeah, tomorrow would be the absolute drop dead, other suggestions, but we're hoping y'all finished.
I move that there be no further amendments.
All right. Before we adjourn, let's get the secretary in because then I think we've got the close of the meeting. That's good. Huh? We're not going to do an executive session. We're not going to do any of that. We're going to suspend that as well. Huh? All right, Madam Secretary.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
your first speaker this
morning.
First speaker this afternoon is James Dunn. Dunn here. Evelyn Daniel. While Ms. Daniels is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking, Ms. Daniels. Citizens and other visitors attending City Council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to the members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant is armed so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You will see a 30-second flashing and then a red light means stop.
Can I have 6 minutes?
No. Only three.
You can begin.
Okay, I would like to see this photograph here. We want to pass it to someone.
All right.
Please. This is my efforts to run for mayor just, 3 years ago in 2007?
Your time is moving now, Ms.
And also, right here, this is the letter that is dated September 27th, 1996, from the Secretary of State. My effort to run as a write-in candidate for U.S. President. Okay, this is from the Secretary of State, dated August 20th, 2010, of my effort to run for other offices to put me above and beyond groupies, the Dallas Cowboys, and every other, you know, illegal person that hangs around you, from California to the movie industry to the music industry,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, is a visceral pest to my life. And I have continually called the police
mm-hmm.
and told them to remove these people from around my house and harassing me, because we personally don't know one another. And here are all of the voters, the registered voters from 1996, including Marilyn Hickey from Denver, Colorado. I noticed you had somebody from the DFW Airport CEO. Denver, Colorado is also an airport city and state. And I would just like to say cyberspace. What is cyberspace?
Mm-hmm.
It is connected to the FCC. It is an illegal invasion into my private house with people I don't even know. Cyberspace and cyberspace crimes are real. They draw people into your private life and into your private space that you would not ordinarily met on your own.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other explanation for these people to come into my private space, into my private life, strangers of every walk of life. People I don't know and don't care to know. The scum of the world.
Mm.
And so I wish that this city would compensate me for this great invasion and remove this great scum away from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Sergeant Anderson is going to give with you and we're going to discuss that. Madam Secretary.
Richard Sheridan, followed by Nkumba, Lex, Jewel Floyd.
Yes, good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Rich Sheridan, 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas. I appreciate being here today. I'm here to speak about the Dallas homeless crime or insanity. I have a certain qualification to speak on this subject, considering the fact that my mother committed suicide in 1970 because of mental health problems, and my sister went through a 20-year mental health odyssey. Dallas County Sheriff Luki Valdez on KRA Sunday Sphinx TV show stated, "We, the county jail, have become the mental health hospital and homeless shelter of Dallas County by default. The mentally ill and homeless are better served elsewhere where they can be properly cared for. Dallas County, Parkland's jail and health care costs for the homeless is between $70 and $100 million a year. Add to this the Dallas Police Department's cost of arresting, appearing in court on homeless criminal charges, and their increased exposure to disease, and the homeless theft and property damage. The combined county and city cost may exceed $100 million. There are also the lower property values in the vicinity of the bridge because of ongoing crime and drug use. It is well known to the homeless provider advocacy business that there is a pay me now and pay me later principle. More and more cities are finding it less expensive and less dangerous for the homeless to shelter them rather than let them sleep in the street. A homeless person is less likely to commit crime. Desperate people do desperate things, and they are at a much lower risk of getting sick, going to Parkland County medical clinics. They're also less likely of getting run over, which happened a couple, 3 days ago. So why the very high county homeless cost? Dallas, 5 years after going forward with the planning and building of the bridge, still refuses to appropriately and morally address the basic need of homeless shelter beds. With the big fanfare of the bridge opening and recent accolades about its performance, most people don't know that the bridge only added 300 beds to the total city shelter bed count of 2,800 beds, a 10% increase. With the Salvation Army's recent 8,200 homeless count, there are approximately 5,000 street sleepers in Dallas, an all-time high. Today, both city and county governments have put a stain on our collective souls. They have gone against Christian, Jewish, and Muslim principles of caring for the less fortunate. They have lied to us. They have put us in a situation where God's judgment and punishment are now upon us, and it is going to get worse. Dallas Money Elite will begin to lose a lot of money, and the upcoming Cowboy season and the Super Bowl are fixing to be complete disasters. You think watching the game is bad? Just watch the rest of the season. What right do I have to say this? God bless Reverend Joseph Clifford. head of the First Presbyterian Church more than once has liked me to be a modern-day John the Baptist, to be a prophetic presence in Dallas. Some say that I am a pathetic presence in Dallas. My skin is thicker than it's ever been, and I thank God for His grace. What the city of Dallas is doing for the homeless is either a crime, insanity, or both. In Dallas, Karen, is a tragedy. I suggest the elected officials involved in this abomination to read Revelation 2012 to motivate them to put the city and county and
thank you, Mr. Sheridan,
and their own souls back on the path to God. God bless you all.
Thank you. Next, Madam Secretary.
And Zumba. Not here. Jewel Floyd. Not present. Trina Trent.
Mr. Margola, I want to first personally thank you for the emails and inviting me to the town meetings and budget hearings that are very important to me. Like many of the people who spoke this morning, I am definitely for budget changes in how you do budget, seeking to cut waste and not increase taxes. As a matter of fact, I bought a receipt that I paid for my lunch. Of course, I could have eaten for free, but yesterday I paid for my lunch. Today I paid for my lunch. Yesterday I went to the store. Yes, they do not say you do not have to pay taxes. So I care where my taxes go and how they're spent. Nevertheless, let me quickly read. But when a long train of abuse and usurpation pursuing and verifying the same object, events are designed to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And this is only excerpts from the Declaration of Independence. And this is about the king. He has refused to dissent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people were relinquished the right of representation in legislation. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with many firmness his invasion to the rights of people. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws of naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for their tenure of the offices and the amount of payment of their salaries. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. And that's only a little from, again, the Declaration of Independence. That's the king. And that's why we have people who would stand up, speak out, and that's why we are now the United States of America. I do not think anyone can arbitrarily say that the Aviation Board cannot speak today, since many people may have come to hear that briefing. I don't think anybody can arbitrarily change the council agenda when people are here to hear what is going on and to give their consent to those they elect. We are still a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Let us not forget, we pay taxes so that we can have representation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Madam Secretary.
William Hopkins, Russ Ramlin, Carlos Marquin, Marvin Crenshaw, Dwayne Wooten, Leslie Davis.
Hi, everybody. Yesterday, hello to you. I can see you. I don't have much to say today. All I can say is I wish everyone would pray for me. I get my heart together. And for the spiritual, so it's been a lot of business to be an asset to God's sake. I support Israel. And I thank God for supporting because it's written about it. The King James Version about the same. Those who support Israel will be blessed by God. And we just try to give you all we can about Israel. Because if it wasn't Israel, it will be
it's going to be, well, going to fix the whole world. What happened? It's going to fix the whole world. Okay, another thing. All y'all sitting around watching TV, y'all need to get with y'all kids and try to teach them the best you can. And I want to tell you, teach them the best you can of what you know. Because these students, colleges of the day are not teaching the right thing, or they're not, people are not really getting the jobs they want, so they have to sit there and resort to other ways of making money. And another thing is, I already said I was going to pray for you, right? Y'all going to pray for me?
Yes, we're waiting on your birthday, too. We have a party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, September 29th. We all know when your birthday.
Wait a minute, y'all not even gonna be here.
We're gonna celebrate your birthday the week of. We're gonna celebrate your birthday the week of. Plus, you're gonna get another present.
Okay, yeah, another thing. I went to the Department of Transportation allocate funding, like a benefit for the working people is sometime between June 1st and September 1st, where the bus driver would be 50 cents. Bus driver would be 50 cents and a stimulus tax for the pool. Because the pool can afford to try a bus driver, something going on for the next 2 weeks. And I think that would help a whole lot if people get to where they're going and work, and then after, you know, work a while, they can afford to pay the high bus driver. Let's see what else.
Oh boy.
Lovely. Okay.
It's not just so.
Yeah, read your Bible. Please read your Bible. Every day you read your Bible, every day, because the Bible is what's in the words of the Bible are handed down by God. That is spiritual food. Like you have regular food you eat every day. You need spiritual food for the Bible to grow strong, to make your temple strong. And, well, God bless you. I hope you get the same straight down. And, since y'all, I believe y'all tax increase, I think next year we need a tax decrease.
Okay, good.
We should try to be bold folks, to cancel people. We can cut spending at our corners and cut out our waste and try to work together to save down money.
Right.
And those people that want to come and die, let them come down, but we're not going to pay for the country. We don't want to pay for nobody. You stay in your own town, help your people. If you want to come on your own, because you want to help make Dallas a better place.
So on the 29th, we can't have no cake, no birthday cake.
Have a blessed day. And keep going through
the ride. Okay. All right, Madam Secretary, Mr. Crenshaw is here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was Speaker Carlos Marquis. He has a lead.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, sir.
Carlos Marquis, the Speaker's West.
Yes, I called your name. Yeah.
I'll give
all
you
right.
Okay. Mr. Crenshaw, you can come forward at this time.
Martin Crenshaw, 5134 Mountain Next Little Road. I was just getting ready to get on the bus. And I got the three telephone calls. One of them was about the Martin Luther King Jr. Parade, which I told him, you know, if you're working on that, am I right?
Yep.
Okay. Secondly, the message was on Wednesday, don't go back. We made a move forward. In fact, Ms. Betty Carver was sitting here earlier. We've argued for years since implementation of 14-1 about Marvin, it's just not going to work. And she just told me a few minutes ago, she said, Marvin, I put something on my blog. I said, I don't need those. But I'm proud. I understand what 14-1 is all about now. And that only thing I can say is don't go back. So have a nice weekend.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Crenshaw.
You're James Dunn?
Yes, I am. Okay. Have I come up yet or am I early?
We have passed your name, but yes, sir, you may speak.
Go ahead and speak, and then we're going to move to Ms. Hill.
Okay, now this is done. I read a commissioner's court yesterday because it was more relevant that I wanted you to know. And the last time I stood at the microphone, and this was back in the commissioner's court in June, handed my talk with allegations of possible police corruption and possible negligence concerning non-investigation of rampant pedophilia at A.W. Brown Fellowship Leadership Academy in Oakland. That same Tuesday evening, I received my first visit from Dallas police officer in an unmarked car claiming that he wanted to buy a barbecue grill at my house. The following Saturday, an officer stopped by to actually buy my not-for-sale house. Skip to August 30th, week before last, another warning from a passing vehicle not to speak at Commissioner's Court. 30 minutes later, an officer called to find out why I was speaking at City Council on Wednesday, September 1st, kept on caller ID. At 4:31 the following day, I was summoned to the Frank Crowley Courts Building at the very time that I would have been speaking at Dallas City Council. I did not get to speak at either City Council or Commissioner's Court that week. Six cars of police were on the parking lot of radio station KHBN when I went there to speak about pedophilia at A.W. Brown Academy. I was warned to get out of there, and I did. 99.99% of Dallas police officers are great people who work hard and put their lives on the line for us daily. I've worked for them to get extended sick leave. So who are these rogues? Someone is putting far too much effort in keeping me quiet. A.W. Brown pays approximately $19,200 per month for off-duty police officers to direct morning and evening parent traffic. The FBI is getting this case as official oppression. I met with them last week, and I'll meet with them again this Friday. This is not about me. This is about the children. I spent an hour with the mother of a three-year-old that says her daughter was molested on that campus recently, last night on the phone. And she's going to get back with me today. Now, that is a three-year-old. And if I'm putting my life on the line for that, well, that's a good thing. And I don't mind. I just wanted to put this on record here that if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Come and visit my house, Dallas police officer, anytime you want. The door is always open for you. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, Mr. Don. Ms.
Thank you, Ms. Caraway. And Ms. Caraway, thank you for conducting the ending portion of the meeting. You stayed, and we appreciate that. I understood from the people who record that my previous comment about contributing to the Veterans Day Parade was not captured on the recording because I didn't have my microphone on. I want to make sure that the citizens of Dallas, and particularly the veterans, understand that all city council members are contributing to the Veterans Day Parade, and that was not on the tape. Secondly, there is a card that I have half of, and if anyone has the other half of this card, I would like to have the other half. It may have come from the mayor's office, I'm not sure, but Mr. Matinsky, you may have the other half, but whoever has the other half of this card that went out to people in my district concerning the tax rate adjustment. There's apparently two pieces. I have one piece. I'd like to have the other piece if anyone has that piece. Thank you so much, Ms. Kelly.
All right. Any other comments? Anything else? All right. Let's entertain a motion to adjourn. To me, this is adjourned without a motion. Thank you all.
At 3:47.
3:47. Let's meet this adjourn.